Jeff's too good to sit with us.
I know. Do you want to put your nameplate on the chair?
In front of you?
But still the lowest in the
Okay. Are you all ready to go? Okay, we're going to begin our general fund budget work session. And tonight, the idea is to review, as we have in the past, the budget that has been proposed by the staff, and that means department heads and town administrator, finance department, and all that. And this is our chance to have each of the department heads explain what changes they made and what requests are being made for the new fiscal year, which begins July 1. So we're going to start with our town administrator, Laura Allen.
Actually, I think Natalie's going to start with just a brief overview.
Oh, that's fine. That's okay. That's fine. Great.
That's okay with you. And then Jeff's going to get into the health care renewal with Chris Cropper. And then you'll hear from me.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Good.
So would you like to go over general fund revenues first and then go to health care?
Yeah, I think that sounds like a plan. Hearing?
And then to departments?
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds like a good plan. So good evening, everybody. General fund, overall, I'm going to start with the bottom number, which is page 3 on your reports that I provided, the one that big report. Page 3, overall general fund, we're looking at about $7,055,372. And it is a decrease of 8.8% and comparatively to the current budget that we have. Decrease, some of the revenues went down to basically reflect that decrease. And also, we had a big number allocated to slots revenues, but because we had accumulated slots revenues for our police department, so now we've simply budgeted the exact amount what we are expecting to receive during the next fiscal year, and that number is allocated to rebuild the reserves over the many years in the future. To go over the highlights, real property, that's page 1, we're going to the very page 1. Real property, that number is calculated and given to us by Worcester County based on the assessed value of the properties for the fiscal year 17-18. They build for the next year, so they go in kind of a year behind. Increased by $77,000, $76,939 to be exact. A decrease of admission tax, and I will explain that briefly. We had some accounts tagged on our account because of the wrong zip code. 21811 zip code compiled so many more than Berlin area it is. So the State Department of Assessment and Taxation corrected this, and basically we don't have any amusement tax will be coming to us because our entertainment zone on Main Street is exempt from admission tax. And the two biggest accounts that were wrongfully attached to us is the golf club of Ocean Pines, I believe, and Ocean City. So they're gone from the picture. Building permits going down a little bit. We're not expecting...
Natalie?
Yes.
Back to the admissions tax.
Yes.
What other categories would fall underneath of that tax outside of our Main Street area, which is exempt, and the golf course?
Any business that are for-profit, doing some sale of raffle tickets or doing some sort of amusement that require a collection of fee or money from the public will consider to be amusement and entertainment tax. Example would be if we have a business who do outdoor band and they collect the ticket for people to come in and listen to the music. So those particular revenues that they collect just for tickets only that particular day will be taxed, sent to the State Department, and then State Department turn around and send it back to us.
How about the money that the county collects for raffle, bingo, for nonprofits, but they charge a fee for the license that you need? Do we get any of that back?
If they're in within the Main Street of our, if in within the town, they're in, But outside of the arts and entertainment district would be taxable. But if this event or non-for-profit is located in within the arts and entertainment district, they're exempt.
Okay.
And if I may, mm-hmm. the arts and entertainment district, it is not very large. Mm-hmm. So anything outside of that, Burley Oak is not in our arts and entertainment mm-hmm. district. Some of the other locations, like the new escape room, is not in our designated arts and entertainment district.
They would receive the wishes under those particular circumstances.
Correct.
Basically, for this town, it would be primarily musical entertainment because we don't have any other real attractions, amusement parks, or anything of that nature. We don't have a theater at this time. So there are potential things in the future, but again, the location, if it's in within the arts and entertainment district, it's something I guess we'll have to look at on a case-by-case basis.
True. Yes.
To make sure that, you know, it's being applied.
Every business would be different. If we would have a third vendor, for example, a circus, stop by tomorrow, and they would locate themselves anywhere here, they would be subject to tax because they don't physically belong to the town of Berlin. Mm-hmm. But if they physically attached and have a building in within the arts and entertainment, they're exempt, mm-hmm. whether they're a not-for-profit or for-profit. If we have a rent, space for rent, for example, in Berlin's Falls Park, for any band that would like to charge people for admission, they would have to report this particular day how much they collected to the state, and we will receive a portion of our admission tax for that.
How does that work for... And how does that work for a town event? If somebody... You say the district's not very big. Does it encompass the full downtown?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If it didn't, then those vendors would pay an admissions tax.
They would have to report the revenues collected for that particular day. It's not for the whole year. It's for that particular event.
And just because the only thing I can think of off the top of my head is, and there may be others, we're just not aware of them. Let's say that Burley Oak had some sort of event where they charged, and there's entertainment, and they charged a fee for tickets. Then we should receive an admissions tax from that.
The initiation should happen on Burley Oak level. So we don't file. They do.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's an example.
Right, that's a perfect
that
example.
That exists now,
mm-hmm.
but versus what we may hope to see in the future outside of the downtown. I don't know. You know, anything is possible, but I don't think the Downtown Arts and Entertainment District has venues. And also to be competing with the free events, so I think it would be pretty hard for somebody to charge. It's not impossible.
I'm just wondering, like, we have our popcorn vendors and things like that may come, and I know we've been in discussion about possibly trying to maybe gain some revenue from the events that we've been having. That might be something we want to look at down the road, maybe seeing if we can adjust that. Yes, please.
Whenever there's a town event, specifically, I'll use Oktoberfest as an example. All vendor fees, we do charge a vendor fee for those businesses to come that don't have a building downtown. Like Tom, with his popcorn business, he pays the town a vending fee, and you can see the revenues in under the Main Street revenues, and that's where that money goes, and that money can be applied to that. But when the Globe has musical acts and Finns and Berlin and a variety of other places, when musicians come here to play, they usually have to fill out a W-9. And then when they get that from the Globe, when the Globe tries to, what's the word I'm thinking of? Anyway, the entertainer does not have to pay state tax on their performance. They'll get paid $300 and then supposedly, if they're not performing in an arts entertainment district, they would have to pay tax on that. If they were performing, let's say, in Ocean Pines, but if they're performing here in downtown, they would not have to pay state tax on that.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, just one thing, at least, and things are always subject to change over time, but the philosophy was on events was to so they'd be affordable to everyone, not have admissions to the event. And it doesn't mean it can never be done, but I'll give you an example. That was another reason Berlin Falls Park is is not under the Parks Commission, where we don't want charges, and we don't obviously allow for profit. But Berlin Falls Park is a different situation, and we may have, depending on what the advisory committee recommends, a variety of different things where admissions tax and amusement taxes and all those kind of things might kick in. I hope so.
That's out of the designated.
That's out of the arts entertainment. Yeah, but I'm just saying, it's something that gets lost, and hey, I can understand it. When we were talking about this, it's been, 2.5 years ago? I'm surprised that I remember, but it's just, hey, it's interesting, and I think we, constantly need to look for opportunities that make sense, but the downtown events is kind of an interesting dynamic, because some people come down and apparently spend some money, for food and whatever, and beverages, and buying whatever the vendors are selling, it's all over the place. And then other people come to town and maybe don't have to spend a very modest amount. And I think that was the general philosophy. How it all evolves, I guess it will depend on what laws of supply and demand and what grows and what doesn't.
Thank you.
Sure.
So, Morgan, I'm just going to go over the very big changes, what kind of stands out on the report. You probably will notice that slot revenue number went by 480. Not to confuse a little bit here, but the current year number we had factor what we have collected in prior years. So basically we had a big pool of money sitting there available for police department. So that is all being spent, and we build the police department. Now, anything that we project and to receive, we estimate it to be at 350, hoping that new activities and slots revenues will bring more percent.
The table games.
Right. I'm just...
That's okay.
Activities. That is all allocated to go back to reserves to rebuild what we have spent. County grant does not change. We receive $450,000 each year from the county as one-time grant. Going to page 2.
Before we leave page 1,
sure.
Corporate tax decrease.
It's not. The line item right below, we're just allocating it in two different spots, $280,000 separate. PKS has advised us to separate those two line items because they're different corporate taxes. It's just for bookkeeping, but the allocation did not change. It's 280 this year, 280 next year.
Thanks.
It's the same number.
Okay.
So the two big items on page 2, we have our impact fees, residential impact fees, commercial. Dave Engelhardt and I kind of estimated for next year. Impact fees residential, we're decreasing that amount by $56,000 just because we won't have, in projections, too many construction going on. For commercial, we're going by $1,000, and Dave explains the calculation. It's a dollar per square foot, and he estimates 15 units, so we put in $15,000. Now, the impact fees are restricted revenues. So there is an expense on general fund to offset $115,000 to kind of make it a neutral impact on the budget, because we cannot take this revenues and apply to operations unless we have some sort of special construction improvement building going on related to the particular area that impact fees were collected from.
Yeah. It's basically to offset the impacts of previous development,
right,
in that particular area, and how that's defined depends on where the project is and all that. But it's
right.
Pretty much close by.
Yes. We are estimating to receive $120,000 in grant money for Stephen Decatur Park restrooms. And I think, Mary, if you want to jump in, this is a carryover.
No, this would be...
It's a new piece.
This would be a new grant. This is the Community Parks and Playgrounds grant, the same program that we used for the Henry Park restroom and currently using for the tennis courts. And just as a reminder, the way this particular grant program works, we actually make application in August, so I would have applied for this in August of 2017. We should receive notification of whether or not the project is approved really at any time now, but the funding will not actually be available until FY19. So it's rather a lengthy process for this particular grant.
Late summer, early fall is when if we get the grant.
Exactly. Okay. I believe last year we knew by the time it came time for actual budget approval whether or not the project was approved. So this number we'll know one way or the other by the time.
But bottom line is, if we get the grant, we'll apply it to this. If we don't get the grant, yes, we won't spend the money that we didn't get. Right.
Right.
Yeah. And to clarify, on the capital fund worksheet, you have $133,450 for the Stephen Decatur Park restroom. Will that be offset by the grant?
Yeah. Yes. Part of that is a required match. So the expense would be the full amount, but the grant revenue would only be the state portion.
Okay. So in total, we're looking at a $250,000 restroom?
No.
Okay. Then I'm confused.
I'm sorry. On the capital budget, the figure of $133,000 represents the entire project.
Okay.
Of that, we would receive $120,000 from the state.
Perfect. Thank you for clarifying.
But just in case the grant, as Mary mentioned, we could or could not, so we're allocating the full amount to the capital, whether there is a match or not.
Yeah, it's there.
It's there.
It
could
be accountable for.
Yes.
But if we don't spend it, there's nothing to count.
Exactly.
Okay.
The column that's 2017-2018 year-to-date activity through April. These numbers are actual numbers?
It's actual as of right now.
Okay.
As of April, yes.
Okay.
The next line item is prior year surplus, and I will go over in details when we get to the expenses. But for right now, as of today, we are planning to advance from the reserves $1,314,872,000, which is $18,449 more than in last year. And we will go over the capital list because basically we're funding all of the capital projects from the reserves.
And you're projecting a decrease with the sewer fund, $40,000.
I'm sorry?
You're projecting a decrease in the sewer fund of $40,000.
I'm not sure where you're looking at.
I'm on page 2.
Right.
And it says
sewer fund contribution.
Yeah.
That's a transfer.
Down last column.
In the first grouping.
3461. Probably
16%.
3461.
Those numbers, sewer fund contribution, water fund contribution, electric fund contribution, this is our overhead allocation. Basically, those numbers are calculated according to each fund balance. This is very rough numbers because the sewer and water and electric will probably change a little bit. So those numbers will be slightly changed, but overall, 40,000 decrease is because overall sewer fund balance is lesser as of right now. So overhead allocation, let me just go over and remind again, calculated according to how much salaries we have in administration, finance, collected, and we also take into the consideration the cleaning contract for building and grounds. Then this number gets factored and split to the funds according to the percentage of how much the bottom line is for each enterprise fund.
So basically the idea is make sure the general fund does not subsidize the utility funds.
Right.
For those
enterprise funds contribute back for administration.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
So overall bottom number, as I started my sentence from the beginning. It's page 3 of that.
It might be helpful because it's not real big, but if you just remind everybody what page we're on.
We're on page 3.
Yep.
I have 8.8% as a decrease for general fund revenues in total, which will represent the total general fund because our expenses have to match the revenues and close to zero. So we have estimated 7,055,372 for fiscal 19. I'll stop right now unless you have any more questions about the revenues. We'll go to healthcare and then to each department individually as
well. Right, well, I think the real simple way of summarizing that in terms that I think we're used to is basically last year's general fund was budgeted at 7.7 million. This year it's budgeted at
7.155.
So it's basically $679,000 less. That's probably just nice round numbers, but I think close enough to.
Yep.
Very large round
number. Okay, thanks.
Very large.
Very large round.
Yes, it is.
Good. Healthcare?
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council, and Ms. Laura. What I'd like to do first before we embark on the healthcare proposal of FY 2019, I want to make sure everybody knows Chris Carroll. He is with Atlantic Smith Cropper and Dealey. This is his what year?
With them?
With us. It's been quite a few. But
10?
It's been about 10. So I wanted to remind the mayor and council that 3-4 months ago, per your request, we did send out an RFQ. We met with a number of brokers and an employee group that interviewed. And the bottom line was it was a unanimous decision to stay with Atlantic Smith Cropper Dealey. I will say for the record, in my lifetime, professional lifetime, always been a straight. I call it get to the point ordeal. So I'm very much appreciative of Chris taking the time and being here this evening. What I want to talk about before we get into the healthcare, I want to give a brief overview of all the insurances that we purchase on an annual basis. And the liability insurances, I think you all know, we participate. We're a member with the local government insurance trust. From my perspective, been a good organization to work with. They've been timely. They're responsive. I've never had an issue with a claim with those folks. We're going to find out here real soon if we've got an issue because we have a rather large claim at the treatment plant with the drying bed. So the good news is on that we have an exposure of $10,000, and then the rest will be covered by Legit. Overall, the trust with Legit at the renewal workshop, for all members, are looking at an average of about a 1.3% increase. I don't know what ours is, but what I did for FY19 in the budget that you have in front of you, I planned at a 5% increase. I'll know better probably in a couple of weeks what that number will actually be. Planned it at 5. Overall, Legit's been, as I said, for this year, they announced a 1.3% increase. Workers' comp, I think it's... I don't want to belabor it, and I don't want to beat it to death, as I call it, but the last 2 years, we've seen a fairly significant rise in our cost for workers' comp insurance. Quite frankly, I'll speak probably out of turn when I say this. The overall employee group, the way our workers' comp is broken down so everybody has a good understanding, you have folks such as all of us in this room, department heads, Kelsey, Laura, we fall into one category called administrative. And then we have another category called basically laborers. That would be your public works, your water resources, electric. And that's a different rate for workers' comp. The last 4 years, we've not seen any increase for those rates at all. And then we have the third bucket, and that third bucket is our police department. And quite frankly, the last 3 years, we've had some significant claims with the police department. And I feel very strongly, sitting in front of you. I feel very strongly when I spoke with Chesapeake, the old IWIF, the fact of the matter is, yes, an accident is an accident, but we also war game, if you will, browbeat it to find out what we could have done to have prevented that accident. And I will tell you, hands down, with the two most expensive accidents that the police department has incurred, one of those, I don't think any of us could think of a reason how we could have prevented that accident other than that officer not being there or that person not being there and the encounter didn't happen. So we've experienced a significant increase with premiums for workers' comp, and I attribute that to those accidents within the 5200, the police department.
Now, with that being said, once again, to draw attention to the capital fund worksheet that we have, do we foresee that the body cameras and the vehicle cameras will maybe help us with that cost increase?
That they won't help with the workers' comp, but it'll help with the liability side.
Okay.
And along that line as well, the legit organization does offer grants for police with body cameras and vehicle cameras. And Arnold's very well aware of that, and we'll make that application happen as well.
Thank you.
Okay. With workers' comp, what I knock on wood, if we finish out FY18 on the path that we're on, that'd be a huge plus. Why do I say that? Because it gives us I call it a clean year. We've had minimal claims this year. So that one of the bad years will fall off next year. So that will help out with the premium.
It's an average of 3 years?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. It's called
the X-Mod factor.
And it's called a mod, and it's confusing, but the fact of the matter is, If I put a slide up here to share with you what our premiums have been versus what we paid out, what Chesapeake has paid out, there's not been a win-win in anybody's corner on this one. I mean, there's been some very expensive claims over the last couple of years, very expensive. So I did, just prior to coming up here, I had a conversation with a gentleman at Chesapeake. The reality is if we finish out this year, have a good clean year, then we're going to sit. I call it like this: we're at the top of the bell curve, and we should be on the decline. And that decline next year could be as much as $100,000 in premium. So that's significant. But this year, what we're looking at, we're going from a total across the board for our 72 employees and the mayor and council for FY18. The total premium was $327,000. For FY19, For FY19, we're looking at $327,000. For FY18, we were at $242,000. So we're looking at an $85,000 increase in premium this year. Okay, just to share that.
Sharp.
Now, what I have done, I've sourced it out to other entities. The issue is trying to find someone to pick up the group that has the high premium. Mm-hmm. And the problem I run into is, No dice, no touch. So I'm kind of at Chesapeake's whelm, and I don't like that at all. I will tell you that the initial numbers when they came in were well over 400,000. Okay, I will tell you that. And we're down to 327.
Do you do Same. All of that on your own?
No.
Does Chris help out with that?
No.
Who do you use to help with the negotiation?
Travis Henman helps out, and Laura Dealey actually helped out this year as well.
Well, great job getting it down to what you did.
Yeah. Same number of employees with the same categories.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And again, is it been our least history that we have recorded that this has obviously been a peak for our claims for police department? Right?
It's been terrible.
Yeah. But what I'm saying,
it has.
Very familiar with it, right? So But the thing is, over time, normally, I assume there's periods, like everything else, like the weather, where there's extreme weather, then you have periods of calm, and it goes, it's always in motion. I mean, I would say it would be wonderful if we had low claims, definitely, but we're going through a period to kind of offset some years when we had some low claims.
Yes. Now, the other thing that I'd share, in fairness to the 72 employees that we have, the reality is, there's a word in the dictionary called an accident. Accidents happen. I understand that. Mm-hmm. And again, not going to belabor it here, but I'd gladly do it with you all in a closed session. specifics about what I'm referring to with that particular department. Again, two very expensive claims, one of which there's not a thing on God's earth that we could have done differently other than it not happening. It was a shame. The good news is that particular officer is now back to work. I've been around and seen my share of workers' comp claims, and I call it like it is. I've seen where I think somebody's milking the system. This particular officer, I can tell you right now, there wasn't no milking with that at all. He was adamant. He wanted to get back to work. He told me when he was going to get back to work. He's back to work, light duty, and he's made it very clear. He's given me a timeline when his plan is to be back full duty. And to call it like it is without using the name, he's had two spinal fusions, just to give you where we're at on something. Okay? So we're at about an $85,000 increase of workers' comp premium for the new year, that is. Health and welfare, what we're here tonight to talk to you about, and Chris is here to go into great detail. As you well aware, we started out last year at this time. We made a jump and went from, I call it a traditional insurer, that being United Healthcare, made a decision to go with Evergreen. Significant cost savings. The fact of the matter is, October 1 of last year, we converted back to United Healthcare. We've gone out this year for bid with a number of carriers, and the United Healthcare has come back with an overall just shy of a 4% on the light side, just shy of a 4% increase. Feel confident that maybe we'll get that down another percent. The goal is to be at a sub-3, so he's got his work cut out for him, and keeping everything in place as employees know it today. No change in cards. Same plan design, same network, the whole shebang. And we have explored, obviously, more than United Healthcare. You'll see that in the presentation in just a second. And I think that what we have has been solid. We've got folks in here, not going to point fingers, but we've got folks in this room that are high users, and we've got folks that are no users. So, and to put it on record, I don't care from my seat. If an employee uses every dime of that health benefit, because that's what it is, it's a benefit. And that's why we have a pool of employees. You put it into a pool, and then you let it average itself out. And I think overall we have a pretty good claims record from the healthcare perspective.
You said you're looking at a 4% increase.
3.68.
And how many dollars is that?
We'll get into that in a minute, but I'll give me a second here and I'll give you a number. More than I can imagine. We're looking at a what we got here, Chris? 60,000 times 12, 720,000. Yeah. So we got 80,000 times 12, 800,000, roughly $950,000.
That's not 4%.
No, that's total.
No. That's a total premium for the new year. We're looking at a difference. Okay. You're looking at a difference of 2,000 times 12, $24,000. Yeah. So.
And unlike other years, due to the event that we have with Evergreen, our contract will not expire at the end of the fiscal year. We have a contract that'll go into halfway.
No.
End of the year.
No, we'll renew this contract effective July 1.
Right.
And it'll run through the end of June of 2019.
So to answer that question, we had the opportunity to retain it through October or to line it up with the fiscal year,
okay.
And we examined both.
So line it up with the fiscal year.
Yeah, what happened when we went to UHC effective 1 October, that plan year ran, today, the plan that we're on runs through September of 2018. So we had the option of renewing it October 1 or renewing it, putting it back in line with the fiscal year. We examined both, and really, there was no advantage.
Well, the hardest thing is once you get off cycle with the fiscal year, it really becomes a challenge. Just from experience, most times I'm moving clients back to fiscal year. So unless we had a really disadvantageous renewal, the goal was to move it back to the fiscal year, as would be probably most beneficial for your planning. But if we were faced with 12 or 13%, we might run out the end of the contract to just take advantage of this that extension we had in place.
But at less than 4, it's worth it.
Less than 4, half of trend, we thought was our recommendation is to take the early renewal of July 1st.
Thank you.
And then the other thing that I'd share from, I don't think it was part of a presentation, to be honest with you, but the HRA account setup that runs with it, I just wanted to share for the current FY, we're on trend. The plan is built around the HRA card. Are the cards built around the HRA or around the health insurance plan?
Right.
That money that's on that HRA card, whether you're an individual employee or employee, child, or family, or employee and spouse, those numbers vary on that HRA card because that's part of your deductible and a big chunk of your out-of-pocket. We call it 100%, but we budget 80% of that money, and we've been on track for the last number of years since I've been employed here. We spend about 70 to 75% of that money. So, again, that HRA money that's built into this plan, for lack of better terms, is a promise to pay, meaning that, so everyone here understands, if you go out and you use your HRA card to pick up a prescription, it'll say it's $100, yet the pharmacy's paid, you got your prescription, you're happy, they're happy. Then what happens is that money's dispersed from Innovative, the third party that manages our HRA monies. They send the bill basically to us, and then Natalie's folks pay that bill to them. So that money, if it's not used, it's not pulled out of the account. So
it's almost like a reimbursement system.
Yep.
When needed.
Yep. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. The ancillary benefits, that being dental and vision, what I know as of today, vision's the initial quote that's come back is flat. That's good. That means zero. And then the dental, a very small increase as of right now, but we still have time to play with that. I think folks have been satisfied with principal as far as dental. Not heard any negative vibes on that at all. Vision, heard some negative vibes, and those vibes have been not because of the network, but when you go buy a pair of glasses, I'm looking. We got two of you that have glasses on me, and I look around the room. We know that these ain't cheap. And when you go, you know, you get the question, why didn't my insurance pay for it all? Well, the reality is that would be a very expensive vision insurance. So we think we have a very above average payout, if you will, on our vision plan. I know that when we switched to where we're at now, people were happy because a lot of our folks use Berlin Optical and they're in network, and that makes
sense. Isn't that one thing where there's discretion on part of the employee? Where it's not that they have to pay that amount, it's based on what they want, and they may be choosing eyeglassware that, you know, eyeglasses that are more fashionable or whatever,
yes,
and that cost more than what the insurance would cover if they didn't want
to
pay.
I make the following analogy to make it clear. Personal experience. You go to Accurate Optical in Salisbury. You go in. What I say is I want the glasses that are in network. And they've got a little board on the wall, about six pairs of glasses, six frames. There you go. And then this whole wall.
Yeah. It's called America.
So,
it's a private enterprise.
It's incredible. So, but those numbers we'll have hopefully soon. And I'll turn it over to Chris and let Chris do his presentation.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Burrell, to answer your question earlier, $34,008. Uh-huh. Was the annual total amount of the increase based on the snapshot in time and based on the projection. And what that means is with our employees, we have employees, our volume goes up and down every month. So all we're doing is annualizing some snapshot in time.
Mm-hmm.
So there is variability there. And that's inclusive of premium increase as well as the HRA budget. So to annualize that number for you. Good afternoon again. Chris Carroll, Lennox with Cropper and Dealey. I've been fortunate enough to have the presentation printed as well as for everyone to view. What I'd like to go over first is just a very brief recap of the insurance benefit overview, and Jeff has basically done most of that. Talk a little bit about employer-sponsored versus employer-funded benefits. In addition to that, I want to talk about the voluntary coverages because although they're not a budget item, they're obviously very important to the employees as part of the overall benefit package. Touching base on the health insurance plan structure, most notably the health reimbursement arrangement, and we actually used to use the term medical expense reimbursement plan, or a MERP. So that's exactly a great way to consider a health reimbursement arrangement. In addition to that, we'll talk about the health insurance renewal, the cost analysis, which will be inclusive of premium and the HRA. And then lastly, we'll talk about the introduction of wellness initiatives as something to consider for the upcoming policy year. Insurance benefit overview, we're looking at the health insurance, which is the medical and prescription. Your medical benefits include the hospital, lab, surgery, anesthesiology, all the things along those lines, and your prescription are going to be the things that happen at the local pharmacy and your mail order. In addition to that, we have the health reimbursement arrangement. The town does provide some basic life insurance for any active employees. And then we sponsor the dental, vision, short-term, long-term disability, as well as any supplemental life. Those coverages are voluntary coverages paid by the employees, but they round out the totality of the benefit package.
And let me interject. On the employee elected benefits, such as additional life insurance, short, long-term disability, prepaid legal, AFLAC, you know, in May, when we do the open enrollment in here, there are a number of vendors in here, Colonial Life, AFLAC, Nationwide, I go on and on. The fact is, if I tell employees, right, wrong, or indifferent, when they're looking for term life insurance, you see it on TV, everybody's seen it, you get $100,000 for $9.99 a month, whatever it is, no questions asked, whatever. What's amazing, if you know, Chris brings to the table, through one of his folks, prices for life insurance. But you can go over to Aflac, you can buy that term life insurance as well, you can go to Colonial Life and buy it. Those prices are all over the place. Some people, and I don't have any qualm with this, you know, one of you may drive a Ford, one of you may drive a Chevrolet, because that's what you like. Employees will come in here and buy $100,000 worth of life insurance, term life insurance, through XYZ vendor, and it might be $100 a month, but yet $100,000 of term life with this vendor might be $75 a month. So, yes, you can talk to some folks and say, you know, you can get the same thing for this price, but some folks want to buy that Chevrolet or that Ford. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We always try to talk about life insurance in particular is anything that you purchase at work should never replace any permanent life insurance planning you've done on your own. Very careful with the employees to make sure they don't just check a box and then don't pay the premium at home. That term life insurance is supposed to be convenient and a supplemental way of covering maybe a short-term gap in coverage that you don't have, or maybe it's that when you were first eligible, there's some guaranteed issue that you can get through the group sponsorship that you can't get on your own. But we're very careful with life insurance in particular to make sure that they understand that their own personal planning should be in conjunction with that, as opposed to, oh, that's very inexpensive, I'll take it now. And I always tell them, we'll revisit you in 15 years with Derm, and you may not feel the same way. sort of try to be very careful about that.
And the thing on term life insurance, everybody knows too, the one thing we make sure that the employee has is that it's portable, meaning he or she leaves employment with the town, that term life insurance can go with them. They're paying for it anyway.
From a volume perspective, we've given you a brief recap as to the number of people that are insured, again, based on that snapshot in time. Obviously, with dental, it's going to be different tiers, whether they're covering just themselves as the employee or whether they're covering family members. With all the coverages, your selections are individual choice. So if I need family vision, but maybe I only need individual dental, the same thing with the medical versus the dental and the vision. They can all be at different volume levels for the individual employee choice. 59 employees enrolled with dental with various levels of employee, spouse, children, or family. Coincidentally, 59 in vision, but you can see that the structure is a little different. A couple more individuals, a couple less families. And then the short-term disability, we have 7 that are protecting in addition to any sick and paid leave time. Are insuring themselves with a short-term disability, with another 8 with long-term disability, as well as another 18 with the voluntary buy of life. Some of those have also covered some of their dependents under the life as well. Jumping forward from there, your health insurance program, which is the kind of the driver of everything, we are in a fully insured program for the medical and RX insurance portion. That's a fixed premium. It's billed every month. There's no variability based on the age of the employee. It's a 12-month contract with United Healthcare, and there is no risk retention or rebates. So if we do really well, they don't give us any money back, and conversely, if we don't do particularly well, they're not showing up asking for any additional funds at the end of the year. The plan is built on a chassis that has a $2,500 individual, $5,000 family deductible. That deductible is just like any insurance plan. It's the amount that the member traditionally would have to pay first out of pocket before the insurance company would pay a dime. After the deductible is satisfied, there is also a traditional 80-20 co-insurance split. The insurance company picking up 80% of the bill, the employee picking up 20% of the bill. After deductible applies, copays would apply for your pharmacy benefit, $10 for a tier one, which is generally a generic medication, and $50, $30 in the middle tier, and $50 for the most expensive tier. Those are any ones that you see televised during the golf show or the basketball or anything else. Those are your expensive ones.
$5.
Yeah, if they're doing a commercial for it, they're going to get you $50 on the other side, I promise you. So based on that, that's the general structure of your plan. If not for the next page, the medical expense reimbursement plan, all the costs that we just talked about, the deductibles and the coinsurance, would belong to your employees. The employees do have cap protection built into the program, so the 20% can't go forever. If you have a $5,000 in individual out-of-pocket costs in any combination of deductible, coinsurance, or copay, that's when everything reverts to covered services being covered 100% with zero copay. So there's that cap protection built in. It's regulated by the Affordable Care Act, and as such, it is a genuine total coverage. If it's a covered service, it does have a cap applying to it. That's very helpful when we get to the next page, because when we built the health reimbursement arrangement, we could guarantee what the employee's out-of-pocket cost would be for covered services. Your program is excellent. You fund the deductible 100% for your employees. So from that standpoint, their out-of-pocket cost for deductible is zero. The exception to that is on the coinsurance. Before the coinsurance starts, the employees do have to share some of the burden of any claims costs. So if I had knee surgery and it was going to cost $20,000, I am going to be responsible for $500 of that coinsurance once the deductible is paid by the HRA. It's a little bit complicated how the two layer together, but from an employee's perspective, they know up front they have 100% coverage. Then they know they have a bit of exposure on a claim that goes above that deductible. So if I just have a couple cold costs and flu, if I go in and get a routine prescription, I have very little to no out-of-pocket costs whatsoever. If I get on the other side of the deductible, that's when I'm going to have to start reaching in pocket. $500 for the individual, no more than $1,000 for the family.
And we do offer, what is it, a health savings account?
A flex. Yep.
So that's tax-free, so you're getting about $1.30 on each one, thereabouts.
Yep. We've had over the last probably 4 or 5 years, I don't have the number off the top of my head, but we have gone from a handful of folks that had the flex account now to probably 25. Okay. And what's said to those folks when we go around and to the departments, you know, I'll look at you and say, you're going to have five. I know your claims.
Right.
So you had a year last year. And you got into that situation where you had to have $500. Did you put it away? Nope. Why don't you do this? It saves you XYZ. Most employees do the full amount, but a big chunk of our employees are doing like 50% of that, putting it on a flex card. And that comes in very handy if you get to that situation where you got money out of your pocket. Or it comes in very handy when you go have that root canal done, or you go and buy those designer glasses. That helps out with that as well. And I can tell you that within the organization itself, Water Resources and Public Works in particular have been the subunit that has really increased in utilization of the flex card. So it's a good thing. And the other good thing is, you know, years past, you had money on a flex card, you didn't spend it, it went poof, it went away. now that money actually rolls.
And what is the carry period for that? Is it 2 years, or is it?
You have a maximum amount that you can roll over. So it has a limit of $500 that can roll, but it gives you some extra time to deplete that, or to say, maybe this second year I don't need to put as much money in because I rolled over 500 from last year.
And that's indefinite?
Yep.
Wow, that's nice.
Can you change that at any time?
Yes, annually.
Annually?
It's an annual election. So every open enrollment period, you'll make that election. And
you participate in it.
Yeah, I got a little
money. Okay. A lot of folks don't even know they participate in it.
And when is our open enrollment,
Jim? May 21, 22, 23, and 24. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 22nd, the morning, 23rd, all day, 24th, the afternoon.
And then you have time to review the materials and make that open enrollment leading up to renewal.
And years past, we'll have three, maybe four employees that will not be present. Well, I know two that go on vacation that week every year, so we'll get them when they get back. Then we'll have employees that will, you know, go through the process here. The next week they'll say, I think I want to change this. They've got time to do that. Okay, as long as they have it done before July 1.
So one of the main reasons of recapping the structure is when we get into the numbers side of things, it's a combination of the fixed premium and a projected number for the health reimbursement arrangement. Obviously, to Jeff's point, we're conservative with the health reimbursement arrangement projection so that, you know, the goal is that you'll be at or below the projected portion of the health reimbursement arrangement. So that amount is variable. It's a promise to pay. It doesn't actually get expensed until we have a claim. Or if we have a claim as the preferred. So from that standpoint, it has a cash flow element that's nice as well.
And the HRA card cannot, will not be utilized for vision care or for dental care. It won't work, okay? It won't work at Walmart. It won't work at Quick Shop. That card, it's amazing how, with technology, Sam, how things work.
Got a lot better, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So as part of the lead up to whether or not 7-1 should be the health insurance renewal as we go forward, we did a complete market review. As such, we always start with the in-force carrier. That gives consistency to the employees. From a United Healthcare standpoint, they were offered an opportunity to offer a renewal, as well as alternatives. And the reason we give them that opportunity, or we work with them on devising that, is it may make sense to raise the deductible a little bit and then also raise the health reimbursement arrangement to match it. So we're looking for the optimum point. Conversely, it could be the reverse. It might make sense to lower the deductible to $1,500 and lower the health reimbursement arrangement to follow it down. So we're looking at those kind of levers and working them together to try to find the optimum amount for UHC's renewal. As it turned out, keeping the plan of benefits exactly the same was UHC's best offer for us, and we'll get into that in a moment. We also looked at CareFirst, which is the Blue Cross Blue Shield of Maryland. They had some very competitive premiums when we started combining it with the health reimbursement arrangement, and also taking into consideration that we have employees that use Delaware physicians. We had to use a slightly more expensive platform for that combination. CareFirst was competitive, but not the most competitive. Aetna is another carrier that we look very closely at, very competitive from a rating standpoint. We'll talk about some of the limitations you have with Aetna in particular. They don't like how strong our plan is. They want the employees to have considerably more risk than we are willing to traditionally put on them. And we'll talk about that when we get to the Aetna slide. We looked at Cigna, which we've had in the past, both as a fully insured carrier as well as a self-funded carrier in which we have some risk retention. And then we also looked at the pooled risk plan through, which is a self-funded platform through Legit. United Healthcare on the match benefit offering was an increase in medical insurance premium by 5% with a zero change in the HRA structure. So the combination of those two creates a weighted average of 3.68% above current. And I apologize, there's a transposed digit there. That's 3.68, not 3.86. So So that's a 3.68% weighted average. That's matching the existing benefits that we have now, and that's not making any other changes. Obviously, within your plan of benefits, there are obvious changes that are available. You can reduce the amount of HRA, which expands the employee risk. You can increase the amount that the employees have to pay. So there's multiple levers beyond the carrier and the plan that you can adjust. But the apples-to-apples comparison is 3.68%, taking today's snapshot and fast-forwarding it to 7.1. Next page, which is page 9, gives a breakdown of those costs. Again, as we talked about before, it's always just a snapshot in time. This is based on 66 enrolled members, 30 employees, 16 with spouse, 7 with child or children, and 13 with family. The top is the premium rate. That's the monthly billed premium. That's a fixed number, shows up in the mail. Accounting takes care of it. The HRA funding is into two pieces. There's deductible funding, and then there's coinsurance funding. The combination of those three items are added together to get our total rates plus projected health reimbursement arrangement costs. The numbers on the bottom of the page are the all-in monthly budget. Multiply that by 12, assume that all your employees stayed exactly the same and use exactly the same HRA amounts that we projected, and that would be your cost, fixed and variable cost for the year. CareFirst Blue Cross Blue Shield, which is definitely one of the premier carriers in the marketplace, did give us a fairly favorable premium alternative. They bumped our deductible up to a $4,000 deductible from a $2,500 deductible, so they're working to kind of get a competitive number on the table. In doing so, the increase in premium was 4.2%. That increase, however, when you add it into account the health reimbursement arrangement that would have to increase to make it an apples-to-apples comparison to United Healthcare, made their weighted average at 9.71% above current. And I'll go over these quickly, but please stop me if there's any carrier that you want to spend more time discussing or any plans.
And we still have quite a few things to go over, so
to
the extent that you could move along.
Yep, I appreciate it. Sorry.
You're good.
I apologize.
You're good.
I'm sorry, you get numbers in front of me. I get a little So we'll jump past CareFirst, and we'll touch base on Aetna. Aetna is the only thing that I'll spend any significant time on before we jump to wellness. Aetna did give us a very favorable rating. They said if you are willing to only fund half of your employee's deductible, we will be willing to give you a 6% decrease in premium versus current. It's very compelling, but it's very opposite of what our philosophies have been in terms of the risk to the employees when they go to the doctor, hospital, and lab. And to be clear on this, they would not permit us to reinsure that and do the HRA. They basically are trying to discourage members from using the care. And
I think you got us with needing the town's approval for substantial benefits reduction. That's a no. That's I'm just saying, we're not going to do that. We would never do that unless we were in some dire financial strait.
Understood.
Okay?
Yep. Thank you.
We'll do that.
I appreciate it. I'm going to jump forward several pages jump forward to page 15, which is the wellness initiatives. There has been some conversation about trying to initiate ways to how do we curb costs in the future as opposed to just always paying insurance premiums and assuming that we will be the same level of risk as we go forward. And to do so, there are three pillars of wellness. There's a health risk, know your numbers, you should know your risk. And when I say you, I mean the members of any health plan. Ideally, the way we bend the curve is we know what risk factors we have. The second thing is we have a relationship with a primary care physician. And the third, we instill something that has motion or action involved in it. We encourage people to live a more active lifestyle. To that end, what you would really want to look at is how to develop, where do you want to put the emphasis on carrot or stick? Meaning, do we encourage people to participate in wellness activities by giving them incentives to do so? One of the things that you could do is lower the amount of deductible risk they have in their HRA by increasing their HRA amount, or you could do it more contest-based where you encourage them to participate in certain activities, and as such, you'll reward them by putting them in a contest to win whatever funds you want to allocate towards that, whether it's $250 at GNC, or it's at a sports athletic facility, equipment supply place, those types of things. The other things that are most commonly used to encourage action or activity are rewards for active gym memberships. So that's not just paying for a gym membership, but if you're using it at least 12 times a month and can document it as such, you'll get a $25 credit towards that. In addition to that, sometimes you'll see something towards weight management. Those usually aren't on all year, but they're kind of a starter program that says we'll pay $25 a month, whether it be maybe just to use a traditional household name like a Weight Watchers. We'll do that for the first 3 months to kind of get you started and move in that direction. And that's a those two alone are a $375 commitment financially to anyone that participated, but it would require them to take action to also benefit from that reward. The stick approach is a lot more direct. It basically says if you don't comply, something bad will happen. That will either be the reduction of your HRA, or I guess you just wag your finger and say something bad will happen, that's it, and just don't tell them. but generally what it does is it increases their health insurance premium, or it decreases their HRA access to those funds. So we're more than willing to, more than eager to participate with you in finding the right balance of those types of actions to implement. We just need some direction as to how you would like us to get started. And are you thinking carrot, or are you thinking stick, and what kind of budgets would you want to set to those things? So it's really, we take care of all the hows. It's mostly just focusing on where you want to get started, what things are most important to your employees. We'd be happy to form a wellness committee made up of staff and bring ideas back to you to initiate. But from a budget standpoint, just thinking in terms of what would be interesting to you as things we should consider.
I was going to say along that line with gyms, we're well aware the police station has a gym. Some equipment is there. It's not fully equipped yet. But that once that's there and operational, employees are welcome. So that's a freebie, if you will. But we could, we can tie stuff.
Now, I asked Chris to look into this. I mentioned this last year during budget session. I think largely on a healthcare trend, we are seeing something like this taking place in employers throughout the country. And I think there are some health factors that may lead to us having higher premiums either presently or in the future. And if we can maybe help our employees head down a path that's healthy for them and better financially for the town, I would like to see that personally. So if Chris could do a little bit of digging into what program would best fit the town. I would personally like to see more of a carrot right now and less stick. But ultimately, if we're faced with a market increase of, what is that, about 8% in the future for healthcare premiums, then I would say that we need to start with the stick then. But I would like to see a carrot now and maybe stick in the future.
Is there, and then with life insurance, it's very much actuarial effort based on the age of a person being insured.
Yep.
Is our health insurance cost and its rise directly related to the, I'll say, greater than average age for our working employees?
Yeah, demographics is the biggest factor in your rate today. And that just, it depends on the carrier with and the market segment that you're with. Right now you're in what's the 50 to 99 employees with United Healthcare. They're generally pricing you based on the demographic as the primary driver.
So all I'm saying is one of the things we also have to take into account here in any projections is the fact that we have, for this time, we have a large percentage of our employees are within retirement age.
A more senior workforce, yes.
Very much so. And they're very experienced and they're very good. But I think we have to keep in mind that every 5 years, unless some of these people decide to die at the shop, right, which I hope not, I don't want them to. But assuming that everybody retires at a point that's right for them, this is going to have a significant shift because 10, 12 years from now, we're going to have a very young workforce.
Yep. Yeah.
We have to, because I don't want these people to jive on the job. And really, I'm just trying to be realistic here. we have a problem that's not going to be meeting the same problem, and we need to figure out how, what we do during this transition, make sure everybody gets the best deal possible, and then, but we also project out, because we know who the folks are, we know their age, you can guess within 3 to 5 years. I mean, it'll be a rare exception, and if somebody leaves earlier, you know, bless them. But you know, just keep that in mind, too.
To that point, we had a Medicare education meeting not that long ago. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, it's something we're attunedly aware of. But I think the good thing about wellness is whenever you start that initiative, even it becomes a little cultural. So even if you start it with your young people, hopefully it means that they're a healthier workforce as they grow with you.
Down the road when their time.
Yep.
For thinking about retirement.
And I want people to retire healthy. I want them to live forever, if possible. But, I mean, that's where I want to go with this program.
I agree with Zach. I think we need to do something. And I agree with the carrot approach.
I do too.
But the hospital uses a combination of carrot and stick. Some things you have to do. If you're going to be utilizing the hospital health insurance, some things you have to do. And on top of that, you can do extra stuff and receive that carrot.
Love it.
Yeah.
You have like a point system, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you get 100 points and you get a reduction or something along those lines?
Yeah, you can change those points into cash.
Really?
Yeah.
That's nice. So we can do some things even with UnitedHealthcare if they're the carrier of choice. Some of their programs are baked in. They're already inclusive in the formula, so we can require a health risk assessment, and we can require the things that don't require anything from the employee other than their participation.
Yeah.
And to your point, if you're not willing to kind of meet us halfway, then obviously there's going to be an increased cost to you for not participating. Yeah. And then the reward things can be layered on top of that, and for those that want to go above and beyond and complete some challenges and live a more active lifestyle, make sure they're seeing their primary care physician once a year, then those we can build in some very inexpensive rewards.
So am I following you, Chris? Are you saying that's something we can do within the UnitedHealthcare proposal for the rate that they have offered?
Yes.
No more cost beyond that?
Yeah, so the underlying structure is there for us, and that we would want to utilize first. So we're using their online health risk assessment, and we're also steering them to the resource within their health plan.
Okay.
And they'll even keep track of the coins and the rewards for us to give us a nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do we currently fund anything that's like an employees' activities committee or anything like that? Because I really don't want this to be like a top-down approach. I would like it to be something that we start, but that the employees can make their own.
Okay.
Yes, organic. USDA organic. So maybe if we look at some form of employee activity funding for this budget would be nice for a program like this.
Awesome. Did you have a dollar amount in mind?
Let's see what you come up with. And we'll go from there.
I'll put some numbers together and give them to Jeff.
Thank you.
That's some suggestions.
Any other questions or observations?
Thank you, Chris.
Requests?
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good.
Before I start, I'd like Natalie just to mention, I don't believe you covered the fact that there are raises included.
We haven't gone to the expenses yet, so I haven't mentioned anything about the expenses. So if you would like, we can go department by department, or if that's okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So overall, in that particular expense of general fund budget,
what page are we on?
Where we are with
We're not on the page yet. I'm just giving
a little
bit.
We're not on the page.
Okay.
She hasn't lost you yet.
We have included 10% increase in health care, as Jeff mentioned. 5% increase on liability insurance. We also have 3% increase for all of the wages. And in employee retention, we have $500 across of all the departments carried to the press, which will go next week. So now if we go to page 3.
I have a question.
Sure.
You talked about at across the board 0% increase for all staff. Could I get a number associated with that cost per department? So you're going to have each department, and then you're going to have a total of everything associated with the
0%. I have a number for you for general fund as of a total. If you want me to run that to the office, I can print it by department.
You don't need to do it now, just sometime between.
You don't want the number now?
Sometime between, start with the
she can give it to me. For once, she doesn't have to go.
She can just run back and print it.
I think we should hear the general fund number anyway, since that's the fund we're focusing on. We don't mind.
Good for you.
Plus, she smiles, so it's a good thing.
I can do that.
So I can do that.
So the general fund, 3%, only general fund.
Now, because what would be the amount of the fringe benefits associated with this
$66,000? $24,957. And I would not call it fringe benefit, I call it one-time pay, $500 allocated to each person.
When is that paid?
Thanksgiving.
I think Dean's actually asking about fringe benefits.
FICA for this $66,000.
Oh, I don't have that number, I'm sorry. I didn't calculate the FICA on the 66.
Okay.
It's
what you think
it's
it
factored
is?
In the budget on the FICA already.
Give me your best guess associated with this $66,000.
Let's take 66,186 multiplied by 0.0765. I don't have a calculator.
If you say it one more time, I can do it for you.
0.0765.
0.0765. Yep, $43,002.
No, 4,300.
4,300.
$4,300.
Yeah. It's a team effort.
Major changes here, pretty much all the items in within the line each other, and if we flip to page 4, the bottom line is increased in comparison with per year of $50,000 or 37%, basically due to health care and some changes in the plans and personnel costs. Other than that, there is not much of a difference. Administration is the next department.
Do you want me to take that?
Sure.
Okay. So administration would reflect the same types of personnel cost increases, which we've discussed. So I'm on page 4. We have under professional services, we've got a comprehensive plan update and money for a parking study. So $20,000 for a parking study, $10,000 for the comprehensive plan update. I've got this in here as a fallback position. We've applied for a grant in the Stormwater Fund of $75,000 to update the comp plan, so I'm still waiting to hear. So we may not need this 10, but I need something to work with if the grant doesn't come through. So that's what that's there for. And then there's the money for the parking study. Moving on to the next page.
Is this, one question, is the salary for the Berlin Falls Park position in that 330, let's see, hold on.
4,000.
It's coming out.
Contracted services, and it's coming out as a capital outlay. We factor that as a part of basically building the Berlin Falls Park.
It's on the next
so
page.
It's on page contracted five. Services is in capital outlay.
Okay, so we'll get there. Thank you.
Right, so if you move to page five, at the top we have a series of contracted services. So we do have the Berlin Bikeway lease agreement budgeted. That's that contribution we've made towards the preparation of that project. I also want to draw the council's attention to the fact that we have a $6,500 allocation for an actuarial study for LEOPS. This would be enhanced retirement for our public safety police officers. And so what you're recommending is that you include somebody in this budget for a study. We're not committing anything beyond a study, but there's some questions to what the cost would be, and I think there's an interest in getting that answer.
At least for what we generally understand, it's a substantial cost. So before we can even begin discussion, if we don't know what it costs, we don't know how to talk about it. So
Mayor,
that's the idea.
Uh-huh. If I could interject, so everyone has an idea, the current retirement that our full-time employees has, it's the Maryland State Retirement Employee Pension Program. Mm-hmm. The way that that works today, the employees have a 7% contribution to that. The employer has roughly 10 and a third percent that you contribute. Under LEOPS, the employee, let me back up, under the current retirement plan, for most folks, age 62, they can now collect that benefit. Under the LEOPS plan, the cost now goes and stays at 7% for the employee, and it's about a 36% payment from the employer into the plan. So it's a little more than three times the amount. But what the employee gets out of that, if they're covered by layoffs, and that's only for sworn employees, what they get out of that, it's 20 years of service or age 55, and they can draw that money down. So before you can embark on that, there needs to be an actuarial study through a CPA firm that gives you the actual numbers of what it's going to cost, because there's been some money's already contributed throughout the years. So the initial first 2 years, the premiums might be a little bit less than the 36%.
But once they start, they stay there forever.
That's right.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
However, what law enforcement agencies in Worcester County have LEOPS? The county?
No.
Worcester County has LEOPS, I believe.
I don't think they do.
No, I think it's just Pocomoke.
Do they have LEOPS?
Sheriff's Department has LEOPS. Mm-hmm. But do any of the municipalities offer LEOPS?
Yes.
And is there a way that we can get under an umbrella with the county to get a better?
No.
Okay.
That's the actual cost. The numbers of
through
what
the
happens
state.
Every year about February, the state retirement agency sends me a spreadsheet that says this plan costs this, judges cost this, blah 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 blah. So the cost is the cost. The thing that I would share, we're getting way off, I know, with what we're doing, but the thing that I share with you folks again, Jane, Dave, all of us in this room with the retirement plan that we have, after 10 years of service, I can retire. Maybe not draw that money, but I can retire. I can go to work for under LEOPS, those employees, again, 20 years or age 55, they draw. And I understand wholeheartedly with a police officer that when he or she gets a certain age, they're not going to run down a bankrupt. I mean, let's just call it like it is. But larger agencies, those folks would move from an active beat officer, as I would call it, to more of a support person. We don't have that luxury. But we do have the luxury where a person can leave with what they got and go to work somewhere else.
So we've got $6,500 in here for the study.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. We'll find out how much we're really talking
and then,
about.
Somebody was asking about the Berlin Falls Park coordinator position, so that's under capital outlay further down towards the middle of the page.
And what did we spend last year on that capital outlay? for the position for the coordinator.
Do you see that on the report now? Quite see it.
Through
April, I think it's...
It's the total number. I would have to separate. I'll send
it's,
an
all it's budgeted the same. I mean, I don't know. But we're not budgeting any different than the
budget.
We're not. We are
it's
not.
The same.
Okay. Now that's,
I know, but it was a part-time position, and I saw $50,000. I just want to know what we spent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So she'll have to break it out.
That's what I hope I see. So,
yeah.
Thank you.
So it includes in that 150. There's the coordinator's salary. There's also $100,000 for capital. That's still a portion of the bond that we released in order to purchase the property. Moving on down, we've got the usual website. Environmental initiatives, no major change there. I'm proposing at this point to maintain the funding allocation to the fire and EMS, the Berlin Fire Company, at which you've typically provided, at least in the last couple of years, which is $250 for operating and $150 for capital, at least at this point.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the last 4 years, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Then we get into travel, dues and publications, employee training. So employee training goes down this year. Kelsey's been in graduate school, and I believe she's finishing her degree. So
congratulations.
You'll see that pop off of here. Next major item that I wanted to get into is information technology, and Sam is here. Sam's going to talk a little bit about why we need to invest some more money into our network and our IT system. If you wouldn't mind coming forward, Sam. But also in this budget, we're including, at least recommending, a small amount, about $3,000, to do an analysis of fiber. This would be running fiber to all of the town buildings, but also taking a look at the feasibility of running fiber through downtown and then charging property owners or businesses some kind of a fee to access it. We have talked about running fiber to the buildings here to help with some of the remote locations and some challenges they have using the service like Tyler, just some basic stuff with the software. It's Sam's recommendation that fiber will resolve that. To me, it seems like it's worth taking a little extra time to see what else we can do with fiber. I think that could be a really interesting economic development opportunity for our businesses downtown. And so what we've got in this budget is some money set aside for us to access Sam's technical expertise on that. We would be also in here increasing the amount of money we would be paying cards for their services, in part because Sam's never raised his rates in the time that he has been working with the town, which has been
10 years.
10 years. Thank you.
And
also, I'm asking Sam to do a little bit more than what we've had him do in the past with regard to training. Some of that's security related. Some of that's also just making sure that our employees keep their skills fresh. So with that introduction, I'll let Sam touch on anything
else. Just before
else.
We go, we're on page 6. And
oh, I did
not
page 6.
The IT account. By looking here, you see a decrease, and I just want to point out, we have transferred a larger portion on the customer accounts because I think Sam will cover that portion of the services and costs, it's basically for the whole entire entity. And because customer service accounts spread across of enterprise funds, we place that cost listed on page 9, $47,000 on customer accounts, which would be a large increase out there, but it will be spread according to percent to water, sewer, and electric later on because it covers the whole entire account.
So, just so I understand what you just said.
Okay.
We're going to see a decrease here.
Right.
But that decrease is being picked up by those other accounts.
Correct.
And we will see an increase in those other accounts. Tell me, the increase in the other accounts will equal this $15,000 and more?
And more.
Okay.
Yes.
You cracked me up with something the way you structured it.
I just got to understand it from it.
We do the whole cost and we put some on the service, some in that, and we left. But looking at decrease, it doesn't mean that it's a decrease the whole
Which is part of why I'm saying we're paying, disclosing to you that we're paying Sam more overall for his services.
I got it.
Okay. Sam, is there anything that you would like to say specifically about the importance of maintaining network security and some of the recommendations that you're making?
Yeah, thank you. I think you covered the main points there. I'm finding two things pretty common with clients these days, and one of those themes is certainly security. We're going to be upgrading some of the infrastructure across the town this year, putting in more robust firewalls that can handle some of the larger threats we're seeing these days, trying to cut back on the potential for ransomware attacks or any type of other breaches that can occur. So we have some technical changes that we're making this year to try to increase security. But I think another thing that organizations struggle with to a certain extent is around security. A lot of times the weakest link is the staff itself. And employees with weak passwords or poor security practice policies or just the lack of training really is what it comes down to. So one of the things we're going to do is we're going to do a workshop. We're going to bring all the town employees in and probably a couple groups at a time and go through some best practices around security training, good password policy use, those kind of things. So there's going to be a big focus on security this year. Another thing we're preparing to do right now is our email system that 5 years ago we put in a server to run an email here. Well, we did 10 years ago and upgraded it 5 ago, but it's time to do the next iteration of that. And many of you are probably familiar with Office 365 or at least seen Microsoft's ads for it and things like that. And one of the things I noticed a lot of organizations do with Office 365 is we take their email from their office and put it in the cloud, and that's the end of the project. You don't get the full realization of the Office 365 subscription you're paying for unless you're using the other 32-some tools that are in there. Now, we're not going to use all of them in the first couple of weeks here or anything, but we're going to walk some of the town employees through a discovery process of how to identify what tools would be useful in a day-to-day communication and collaboration perspective. So we're hoping to increase some efficiencies and teamwork and exchange of information with that. And then also we're going to schedule another workshop, too, to go through a lot of the town employees, whoever I think some might be, it depends on a person's computer skills. If they're a more novice user, they might not take full advantage of a full-on training class, but some of the more power users and administrative folks would probably benefit from a discussion around, how can we set up meetings quicker and how can we be more efficient in how we're communicating and storing our information and accessing and all that. So that's the bigger components of what we're going to try to do this year is increase the awareness around security and the awareness around productivity and everything with what we're doing. So,
to piggyback on that, we're going to be doing some upgrades to where the police department used to be. And I don't know if we'll keep our conference room here or how it's going to be configured, but I would really like to see us have a nice spot where we can do some video conferencing.
Great.
We don't have that capability, and I think that's really lacking.
Okay.
So.
One of our managers at our office, he's the one who can design audio video systems and conference rooms and stuff. We could definitely talk more about that if you want to get a modern meeting space set up. We can definitely help with that.
I think that would be beneficial, even if we're sourcing other positions later on down the road, hiring people from California, so we know.
And part of the move to Office 365 is you guys will be able to use Skype for Business, which is an audio and video conferencing solution, screen sharing and those sorts of things. It's pretty good setup. So we'll be able to take full advantage of that.
And I want to talk about fiber.
Tell us about the fiber.
Yeah. So right now the way that Town Hall houses the Tyler software database, which is our financial system here that we have today, and it hosts the email system, which will be moved to Office 365. A lot of the files and documents are stored here in Town Hall too. And we did that so we didn't have to install servers at all of the remote locations and manage all that stuff. So right now, all the remote locations log into the server at Town Hall over a remote desktop, which is over the Comcast cable internet that we have tying everything together. And that's across the private network and that kind of thing, so it's secure and everything. But what we want to do is we can essentially, if we had fiber optic cable from say the wastewater treatment plant over to Town Hall here, that essentially makes the wastewater treatment plant sort of the same network as Town Hall. It's just a really long wire that runs at the speed of light going down the road. So to the employees there, they wouldn't be going over a high latency, at times problematic Comcast cable internet connection, they'd be going over this fiber line. So it would change the way that we are connecting the remote sites. They wouldn't be using remote desktop anymore. They would be using desktop computers just like employees in Town Hall here use. So it will make the remote site set up very much the same as Town Hall, so there's an obvious benefit there. We don't have the remote employees sort of working on a different system than what the Town Hall employees work on. So that's my primary purpose in this, obviously, but as I spoke with Laura and Mary more about the entire idea of this project, we feel that, and also with Tim and the utilities, a lot of utility systems these days connect to fiber optic networks and can be maintained better. You can anticipate problems better. There's equipment that can be upgraded that would improve alerting when there are power issues going on. So it would probably help the overall town infrastructure if we had this fiber optic communication between the various locations. So our goal with this project is to put together all the requirements, and hopefully, I guess, an RFP will come out from this, and that's what we would put out to bid for. Our company isn't, we're not fiber construction specialists. I can get two buildings connected together when it comes to utilities and highway permits and all that stuff. That's not our wheelhouse. So we want to get a company that can help us with all those things.
Is this a two-part thing? Is one when you're going to find out how much it would cost to be connected to our, auxiliary, the other offices that we have, like, the electric utility and public works and all that. And then part two is to find out, I'm not quite clear about the overall, providing fiber optics, is it just, that second part is unclear to me. Is it, are we talking about downtown, the entire town? What are we talking about?
I think initially the plan is to, as part of the RFP process, is to identify all of the areas that we could impact with fiber. So figuring out exactly if we put fiber in, what can we do with it, what benefit, because the obvious benefit is the one I just rattled off about connecting the sites together better. But if we can use it for a better public internet system, or maybe businesses could purchase bandwidth, or there's also state programs involved where you can purchase internet from different carriers at a discounted rate. So there's some different opportunities out there. And I think the purpose of this is to do a discovery of all the opportunities and find out what we can bring in and utilize.
Yeah, exactly, to see what's feasible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do we have light industrial zoning in the town? Right over here to the north, we have one site that's light industrial, right?
Along the railroad?
I believe so, but it's that plot of land that's across from Sunrise, right? Isn't that light industrial?
Well, part of it's light industrial and part of it's residential.
Can we make sure that study's including, at commerce, that it...
Yeah, I definitely think it should include all parts and then figure out what we can do and then as these areas develop.
It's a huge differentiating factor for some employers.
Yeah,
I think that's important. And part of one of my life initiatives, so to speak, on Delmarva here is to increase the amount of broadband we have available to everyone. I work with other companies that up in Chicago and New York and stuff, and they have 10 carriers they can pick up from for internet.
Yeah.
We have to pay someone thousands of dollars to put it at our office. So it's not the businesses down here lose a little bit from that, I think, too. So. A lot of people could benefit
Comcast
from
dropping. I mean, in Ocean City, they've run fibers that are over the whole town now. They plan on doing it in Berlin, or they might.
Well, that's all funded by private business for the most part right now. So, let's just give an example. When there was no fiber in Ocean City, if I wanted fiber at my business, I'd have to pay Comcast, $30,000 to do that. And what Comcast does is they amortize that construction cost over a 3-year contract, and you pay monthly for it. But then what happens is if your neighbor wants it, they have to build construction there, but it might only cost $10,000 to put it there, so then your neighbor might end up paying a smaller amount. So I have some clients that are paying $2,500 a month for fiber, and some are paying $1,500, some are paying $1,000, because it's going down as it's going on. A lot of that is funded by private business right now. Now, Comcast and a lot of the providers have funds every year that they're going to spend $2 million in subsidizing construction, which they do, but that's kind of just funded by the ISP itself. So, yeah.
Now,
what's an ISP?
Internet service provider, sorry.
The fiber typically goes underground?
Most likely it'll be a combination of aerial and underground. And in fact, your utility department, and Tim, with Tim running that up with his expertise in previous employment, he knows how to do the lashing and put the fiber on poles and do all that work. We need to find someone who can engineer what we have to buy, what's the bill of materials, how does it need to be ran, that kind of stuff. So
if the services are...
What's that?
If the services are above the ground, it would be above the ground, and the ones that are underground would be underground?
That would be more up to whoever is doing the actual construction, but typically what I see is that if there is conduits in the ground and there's availability to put it in the ground, that's a better path, obviously, than having it, because then you don't have cars hitting poles and things like that. Right. So, yeah. And
trees.
Yeah, exactly. And we would probably, depending on the design, if we can afford to do it, depending on how it's constructed, we might be able to do a more of a ring design, so if someone does hit a pole somewhere, the fiber has an alternate route around that, too, so that site isn't down for a day or two while it's being fixed.
Especially with this dependent.
Yes.
When you're offline, you're basically out of work.
That's right, yeah. And then some things, of course, can be offline, and some things, like probably most utility-related things, cannot be offline. So we've got to
from a security standpoint.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
No, it sounds like it'll be a very interesting information that we're going to get. I thank you for thinking of it, and it's one thing. Just to consider is if it's I don't know what kind of money we're talking about, but is it one of those things that if we have to, do we maybe link the town, put the town online together with the fiber optics? And then, let's say, the business district or some area of the business district in the immediate residential areas. And then, I don't know. It depends. It just depends on a lot of factors that we just don't know yet.
Yeah, we want to kind of take a long-term vision approach with this rather than just what our immediate needs are, for sure, because obviously if we can look at the long-term, we can see, well, maybe it makes a little more money here this time around, but in 5 years it might make it cheaper to do X, So we're going to look at it that way. I know you guys probably do not want to get into the internet service provider business, but if there's a way we can make, there's some tax revenue or money that can be made from this too, of course we can explore all those options as well. So,
we wouldn't, Mom.
Yeah, we would.
Does Easton handle any internet service?
I don't know.
Easton does have their own internet provider, and it's, I hope no one from Easton's in the room here, but it's a pretty lousy connection compared to Comcast and other services we have around here. So, yeah.
I know they control a lot of their
users. Yeah. It's a frustrating one for us to have to work with when we do.
Yeah. Any other questions for Sam?
Thank you.
Very, very exciting.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to get started for it. Thank you.
Thanks, Sam. So then just wrapping up administration, we've got some money for the nonprofits under special appropriations. I've got the $50,000 allocated. That's $20,000 for the Cancer Center. My understanding is the Mayor and Council are interested in making a contribution towards the Cancer Center. So that's the $20,000 for that. And then nonprofit grants, we're changing the process this coming fiscal year for that grant process. And what I'm proposing is a $30,000 allocation for all of the nonprofits that apply. We don't know who those are going to be just yet. You need to set the dollar amount. The process you approved was setting the dollar amount and then seeking funding after the budget's adopted. Does everybody see that I'm on page 7?
Nope.
Right towards the top. Special appropriations.
What did we do last year? Same amount?
A little bit less than that. It was $10,000 to AGH, $7,500 to Cricket Center, Worcester Developmental Center, and blanket on the third one.
Diaconia.
And then $2,500 to the Senior Center. Mm-hmm. So I think I bumped it up, rounded it off to 30.
Gotcha.
I'm getting a lot of questions about that grant application process. My plan is to have kind of like an orientation training meeting sometime late May, early June. So you may see more applications come in and just see what happens when they. But we'll be ready for that. And then that's pretty much in terms of.
It basically tells us that we better be prepared that we may have more applications than we have money, or we may have to reduce.
Right.
We have to make that decision. How we're going to allocate what's available, and we don't have to allocate at all if there's not a demand.
Exactly.
And,
so to answer Councilmember Purnell's question, this $30,000 is more than what you have typically, and a lot more. But I did round it up, so it's a little bit more than what you have typically donated. But $7,500 may not be the amount that you're able to give to everybody, depending on who. wise.
It is discretionary, and it's on a case-by-case basis.
Exactly. So then I think the only other thing is we've got $5,000 in here for the multipurpose building. There's no change there, but I just thought I'd mention that that's still in there for the coming year.
Well, I would say this. I've talked to Commissioner Diana Purnell. We have been, in recent years, putting $5,000 in and some other in-kind services just to try to keep the building open. And what I spoke to her at Worcester Cares event Saturday is that the building is in need of a new roof and some other, what I'll call, very significant structural improvements. Mm-hmm. And I said, there's no way the town can do it by ourselves. I said, is the county and the nonprofit for one community improvement association, maybe through a grant or a loan or whatever they want. I said, why don't we, if we're going to do anything like that, it's got to be through a partnership. It's not going to be just on us. Because, quite frankly, it went through a period where it was used a lot, then it fell off, and now it's starting to be used more. But it's a regional facility. It's not just for people in the town of Berlin. And so I think that's, I don't know where that will lead for this year, but I think it's the beginning of that conversation. And so I'll just keep you posted. As like I say, she said, there's always going to be more, just like they're dealing with, more requests. But I think there's a genuine interest there that it can't be allowed to just fall apart.
How are they structured? They're a 501c3?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Should that category be under the special appropriations and not a standalone item?
Well, it's changed its vote. It might be something we can consider there, but it is going to be something where it's not going to be, it's a nonprofit without equity, right?
I would just like to see it in the, I think from a standpoint of it being a 501c3, I would like to see it in that special appropriations category, if possible.
I'm not sure that they still have 501c3.
Yeah, that's another we have to check out.
Last time I looked, I wasn't able to find them on any registry. So they may have changed because it's been a while since I've looked. Mm-hmm. So why don't I check into that?
I know they just reorganized.
Yeah, I didn't hear that, but I don't know what they're called.
The new president and board of directors.
But I think that's another critical thing. If they don't have nonprofit status, just like we were talking about with the folks that came to us about the park use, mm-hmm. that's a big problem. Because I'm not sure what it is right now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's a great cause, and I think the building's in desperate need of some help. And I think it's great that the town's willing to do that. But I would like to see it in that special appropriations category.
That's all. Yeah, I'm not my problem with that. But I'm just saying, it's going to be a problem if there's no 501c3.
Yeah,
then we have another hurdle that, you know, it's just, we're just trying to be fair to everybody.
Right.
We treat everybody the same as much as it's humanly possible. Okay.
So that's it for administration, unless there's more questions on that.
That's fine. Okay.
And then I think we've got Ivy up next for economic development.
Ivy's going next for economic development. I want to add to the IT services. The way we structure the budget for fiscal 19 for IT, that services only is information services. The hardware that we'll require to move on with Sam's proposal is an office supplies. So you will see in each department, office supplies went up because we're purchasing and replacing some desktop and also some switches, routers, etc. that will require that connection faster.
Ivy's budget starts on page 16.
Page 16, economic development.
Thanks. Good evening, Mayor and Council.
Good evening.
Last year I spent a very long time going over the budget, and I kept it the same this year because I did a lot of research and switched some things around last year. So everything in my budget that I am in control of will stay exactly the same
16.
As last year, sorry. With the exception of capital budget. Last year I asked for $9,000 for wayfinding signage if I needed it in case I didn't receive grant funding from DHCD, which I did receive $11,000 in grant funding, so I did not need to use that $9,000 at all and will not use it this year. So what I'd like to do is I am asking for $5,000 to purchase some tables and some chairs. I'm also applying for several grants to try to get some money to be able to use to purchase these tables and chairs, but I would like to have that money put into my budget just in case I do not receive any of the grant funding, because I do think it is necessary. I've been going around taking pictures at some of the events. Just these pictures were within about an hour's time of the Berlin Spring Celebration, and the picture at the bottom is what I would like to see at our events. The grant that I'm working on right now is an AARP grant, and they focus on ways to improve public spaces and to encourage multi-generational families to basically spend time together, and also for to encourage the elderly, 50 and over, that's not elderly, but 50 and over, to be able to enjoy quality of life. And I think that that's really important, especially for our events. I think that when you see people sitting on the curb trying to eat their sandwich, and they've got little kids, and they're trying to balance, you know, food and drink, and you don't really want to put your food down on the street and then pick it up to eat it. We do have some picnic tables, but picnic tables are more for a park atmosphere, and plus those picnic tables are very heavy, and Public Works have to bring them, put them on the truck, and then take them back. These will be a little bit lighter. I've already talked to Jeff about storing them in one of the warehouses at Berlin Falls Park. Public Works would drop them off like they do with some of the items that the morning of the event, but then the volunteers, whoever are running the event, would set those tables and chairs up. It wouldn't be up to town staff to set them up, to deliver them there and then pick them up at the end. But I think it creates just a better atmosphere when you have a look like that bottom picture when you walk down the street.
And I know you and I talked about this. Were you thinking about having this set up for every event?
For the majority of events, when there's food vendors, mm-hmm. especially, not for all the events. You know, obviously we don't need them for movies in the park or the concerts on the lawn. But for the, you know, our larger events,
yeah.
Fiddler's Convention and Jazz and Blues and Oktoberfest, and, you know, even for the Christmas tree lighting, some people need to sit. It's a long time. People are standing and they're waiting, you know, to watch the Christmas tree be lit. I think that it's important to have some chairs set up. One of the other things that I'm also doing for the Christmas parade is I'm setting aside an ADA accessible viewing area where people who are in wheelchairs, they don't necessarily, it's easier for them to be able to see the parade in a specially designated area. And they won't be separated from, you know, if they're seeing their grandchild in the parade, and sometimes they get stuck and they can't see because they're
in the parade, doing a parade on Main Street. These chairs wouldn't be set up on the sidewalks?
No. For the parade, I would only set some chairs up in the ADA accessible area, but the rest, I mean, it's everyone's responsibility to bring their own chairs for the Christmas parade. I'm not including the this setup for the Christmas parade. We would probably lose them. They would get taken. And
Most of this is actually right on Main Street, things that are happening on Main Street.
Correct.
Yeah.
The third Thursday concerts, we do need some additional seating for those. Mm-hmm. Let me think what else.
I don't know if you had a chance to talk to Jane about the logistics of moving stuff back and forth. One of the things that works with the third Thursdays is the picnic tables kind of go out and stay there.
And we would just have some of the chairs and tables there, but we would store them in that shed area, or we would store some of them in the Welcome Center, because it wouldn't be that many. What I'm planning on purchasing hopefully about 20 sets of these to line up and down Main Street. I think it would look really incredible.
Do we have wheelchairs available for people that come visit Berlin? And may not
that I know of.
Is that something that grant funding is available for, or not something we want to enter into?
I don't know if there's some sort of liability we take on if we give somebody a wheelchair that
maintenance of them. Where would they get them? Yeah, it would be a lot.
And maintenance. Okay.
It's an idea.
I don't see views in here anywhere. Just keep that for the mayor and I hope at least the first New Year's Eve ball drop.
What was that?
Remember the kid for the kids.
Oh yeah, we're doing that. Okay. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I didn't see it in here. Just want to make sure so he and I can sit out there and freeze.
Oh no, the I don't break down the events individually.
Perfect. Okay.
I'd like to have it a tad warmer.
That would be nice.
Change it to August.
Okay. Any questions for Ivy? Okay.
I wanted to mention the facade grant.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, right. Thank you. Right. So, if you see that historically, it's always been $50,000, and it's been that way for a while because the money hadn't been paid back over the last several years. I did receive a payment.
Help us out here. We got away from the
page 17.
5475.10 to the left, the number, the account number.
The DHCD grant.
Right. So I received the grant funding. It's as you know, it's a reimbursable grant. Someone applies for the facade grant, then I send that off to Maryland Historic Trust. I approve it. They approve it. They also have to go in front of Berlin Historic Commission. And then once everything is approved, they get a letter from me saying that their grant has been approved. And then they have to pay for their painting or their windows or whatever they want in advance. And then they have to submit to me. It's a stack of paperwork that includes receipts and canceled checks, and everything has to match up. And then once I approve that, I send it to Laura, and then the check, and then Laura goes over it with Natalie, I guess. And then they send me the check. I make a copy of the check, and then I submit that check to Department of Housing, or DHCD, and then they send a reimbursement check back to the town. So the town doesn't pay the businesses for this. We just act as the middleman to funnel the money from DHCD to the businesses. So what's happened recently now is we've finally been getting some of that money back from DHCD. That's why it's no longer $50,000, because we don't have $50,000 left in that grant. We only have, right now we only have about $22,000 left, and that'll probably be gone within the next several months.
I'm not quite sure. Does that mean that the facade grant, then the whole process stops?
No, I'm applying for new grant funding. I didn't get it last year because I still had available funding.
Okay. Yeah.
So in order for us to receive more facade grant funding and another community legacy, I need to spend that money by June.
So all of it needs to be spent by June.
Pretty much, yeah. And I do have outstanding facade grants that have been approved, but the business owners haven't done the work yet. Ones that have been approved back in December and January, I talked to them today, and they're still waiting. You know, the contractor hasn't called them back, or the weather's been bad.
Yeah, but they understand that they have to use it or lose it, right?
Oh yeah,
they do. Yeah, okay. This is so they know, because I suspect it's the contractor and the cash flow.
Yes,
it's both. It's got to be. It's just,
This is the person you're talking. You said the business owner, but it has to be the owner of the.
Well, the business owner, they actually own the property. Sorry,
there's
one business owner who also owns her building, and then
right,
there's. A couple others who don't own the building, but they're the ones who have applied for the facade grant with the permission of the property owner.
Okay.
And what's the max per address?
10,000.
And what is the requirement for that district? Is that just Main Street, or do
yes.
we have other districts
it's
in town?
It's only because it's a DHCD grant through the Main Street program, it's only for the downtown Main Street designated area, unless I get a letter of approvals. I've had a couple of exceptions for Burley Oak. I had an exception for Burley Oak, and then I also had an exception for Crush and Crab for his outdoor deck. They approved that as well. But those two were the only exceptions.
And to get other businesses that are not in the downtown corridor,
that
would be difficult to do?
They would only apply or only qualify for a loan program that DHCD offers called Neighborhood Business Works. But for the grant, it's called a community legacy grant because it focuses on the continuation and the revitalization of your historic district. So it's not necessarily for the South Moon Under property or any other outlying properties. It's for...
There's another grant program that they can apply for under, what did you call it?
And that's a loan program. It's called Maryland. It's called Neighborhood Business Works. It's a special loan program for municipalities and for downtown. Yeah. But any other business can't apply for the facade grant. I've received... Even residences want to apply for it, but it's only for commercial downtown structures.
How about a resident that has been converted to a business?
That is applicable.
So Jefferson Street?
Pardon?
So Jefferson Street would be something that, where and Gay, where we reorganize some of that zoning, would that open up for?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Except for the for Pat Forsteg's building, the new building, that doesn't qualify. New structures do not.
But those other structures would qualify. If
right. I mean, Jeff Oxer applied, and he received grant funding to build his whole second level.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
That's good.
So then, just to clarify, did you put the grant funding in for the grant revenue in for the table and chairs? Or just $5,000 for the tables and chairs?
We just put an expense as a capital outlay because we were not sure. So the $5,000 was just an expense. We're not offsetting it by the grant.
Yeah, okay.
Because there's not a high percentage that we're sure we receive it.
Okay. So then I guess the question for the council is, are you comfortable with that, or did you want to handle it differently? Okay.
Remember $5,000 if you're all comfortable with the way it's working.
Yeah.
That's
fine.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any more questions,
Brian? Yeah.
Thank you, Ivy.
Okay. Thank you, Ivy. Exactly. So next we have finance, and then we go into public works. The finance department starts on page 7, so we're back to a little bit of page 7. And I will cover finance and customer accounts as well. Overall, there are not many changes. If you go to page 8, I'll just want to highlight the professional services in finance department. We allocate all of our audit services for PTS. We have $36,000 allocated to the PTS town audit, $11,000 for the fire company, and $3,000 for a special audit that they do for UFR, which is the financial reporting. Combines all of our economic and gross kind of figures, and that gets filed as well. So total of $54,000 for a year. I'm looking through some computer workstations, which upgrading the computer hardware is in office supplies. There's a little bit of increase in there. Other than that, everything else we kind of kept the same overall. Total of $313,000. Customer service accounts, page 9. In the contracted services, halfway through the page, you will find our Tyler annual support and our Logic software that we still a little bit of paying services because we have to access our utility accounts. And just a reminder again, all of the customer service accounts, the whole entire total gets split out through the enterprise funds. So the bottom number will be 0, but it carried to general fund and all the other enterprise funds. services, upgrading the computer stations, which will be in the office supplies. I'm placing some, not significant, but the same amount of money for travel and travel and educational expenses for the employees. Each year, Tyler software providers have a conference that I would like customer service ladies would participate. They will learn a lot going forward because they always come up with something different each year.
Now, our bad debt expense is increasing by 25%.
Debt expense increasing by 25%. I'm increasing by 1,000. Just to be on the safe side, not necessarily we're going to go up, but.
Is this associated with collections?
It's associated with our utility collections, yes.
And how has that been running?
Accounts we cannot collect, we submit to online collections. We close the account to zero, and then they deal with the rest of the work on their end. We do get some small percentage back. Meanwhile, we have to pay for their services, so at the end of it, we kind of break even.
Is our collection rate remaining somewhat
pretty much the same? Unfortunately, we have to send someone else to collections because we don't have a liability to collect forever, so we have to close it. If people move out completely, we cannot reach them, etc. So if you don't have any other questions for finance and customer service, we can move to public works.
Page 12.
Jane and Dave.
Good evening, Mayor and Council.
Good evening.
In case you don't recognize this young man, it's Dave Wheaton. We don't see him very often, all dressed up and got a hat on.
Well, you look great.
Sure. Public Works, that's an easy one. We've actually reduced it by 7.68%. That's the good news.
Yeah.
I believe Natalie gave you a revised
Capital Works.
So this, let me just go over a little bit.
Yeah.
This page right here, highlighted in blue, the reason we left it there and highlighted in blue, this is just for our workshop paperwork. It's not attached to the budget or anything like that. The original report that you received on Friday had the items there. The numbers in actual report is reflected as correct amounts. This is just to see what different in capital outlays that you saw on Friday says today. So we've eliminated some and moved one item to sewer. Those are blue items in public works.
Yeah. The reason for all the switching here is because with our best efforts, we try to get the garbage truck repaired, and it we rented Ocean Cities for 3 weeks, we got it back Wednesday, broke down on Thursday. We got it fixed on Thursday.
Yes, we did.
Broke down on Friday. They came in on Saturday to clean up and broke down again on Saturday. So at this point, we feel like we're kind of in an emergency situation. Even limping along until July is going to be tough. And that's a huge, huge investment of $280,000 for a new sidearm automated trash truck.
How old is the truck that's broken down?
It is a 2009. So we're coming up on the lifespan, the end of the lifespan on it. We can probably patch it up, and run another year with it, hopefully.
We can't even run a week right now.
it timed up.
I mean, I'm laughing, but it really hasn't been fun.
It broke down just in time for the budget session.
So, work session. So the arm truck is used every day?
Every day.
Yes.
Yeah. Commercial and residential.
Right.
And it has a lot of idle time on it and a lot of stop and go, so that's more wear and tear. Mm-hmm.
If this is approved and included in the budget, and of course you can't do the actual, but is it possible once the budget is passed to then begin the process of ordering one? How does that work?
Yeah.
To try to close that gap?
Sure.
How long does it take you to get it?
Pardon me?
How long does it take?
I don't know. The last one wasn't that long. I think it's 30, 45 days.
About 45, 50 days.
Yeah.
They're actually built already. Just got to have them delivered.
Yeah, and so that wasn't even included in our budget initially. We had some other wish list items, but because of this came through, we and I met with Laura this morning, and we decided we can definitely limp along without replacing the Ford pickup truck, and the seal coating equipment can wait till the following year. And the Bottle Branch Road will still get done, but we're going to pay for it out of sewer, out of the hauler fees, because it's the haulers that are ruining the road. All the septic haulers running up and down, all that big, heavy truck. So we're going to pay for it out of the hauler fee, because they destroyed it.
One thing with your new garbage truck and recycling truck.
Yes.
Can you get those reflected? Yes. So that we don't. I want to start seeing that on our vehicles that are on the side of the road. I want to make sure that those are striped so people can see that.
Are we going to make it to the budget time with the trash truck, or is it like an emergency?
The trash truck, we can probably make it through.
Until July.
Until July, yes. The recycle truck, what's happened with it is the body is rusting out. So when they put the recyclable materials in there, a lot of times they're falling out. We put metal in it and welded pieces, and that's rusted out. So now we've put plywood in it, and we're just trying to
make do with
that.
I think you had bins set in this year's budget to replace. Am I wrong? I do have some.
Right, but the bins, well, they'll hold for a little while, but the actual body of the truck gone.
Well, I just think it's worth mentioning.
It may not even be
planned
strong enough to
do sort of a substantial improvement on the truck, the recycling truck, but it looks like that's no longer feasible. Yeah. So that's
too
not
far
gonna,
gone.
Yeah, so it's, that's not going to happen in this budget cycle. So,
is the truck with the arm on it? Is the arm the only thing that's bad, or is the truck itself?
The truck itself. It breaks down.
because it's running idling all the time. It just sits there. Moves
broke down
10
from
feet.
My house a few weeks ago, which is fine. It worked out somehow. They got her going again somehow.
Yeah.
And I think both of them I think Laura or somebody, maybe it was Natalie, mentioned that. Didn't we start with one or both of them as used vehicles to start with?
We did.
Okay. Yeah. So they're in their late part of their second life.
Yeah. Right. Okay. The recycled truck's a 2006.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're out of the usable life of it, basically. Yeah.
Beyond its life expectancy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good. It's good to know. And it's so essential. I mean, let's face it. There's a lot of essential services, but if we stop picking up the trash, oh, boy.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
In the street department, we did get, I don't know, did we finally, we got the final version of the road evaluation from DBF, and Bottle Branch was one of the ones, Harrison Avenue was another one, but then the two that we are funding for this year, because Bottle Branch we paid for out of sewer, is Shall Street and Grace Street.
Page 15,
middle of the page. Sorry.
It's always helpful.
Gene
mentioned the road report, so we did ask DBF to do a study and analysis of the roadway report. I did get a revised version today.
Yeah.
I want to go through it one more time, but DBF, Josh Taylor, will be here on the 23rd to talk about the report and the recommendations that are in there. Both Shell and Grace Street scored pretty high, depending on how you want to count it, right? Lots of problems. Mm-hmm. I think it was in the poor category.
And it is interesting that we've been doing for several years.
Absolutely.
We've been surveying the worst or first, and I think these are the ones they've been on the list a long time.
Yes. Yep.
And because they were smaller and shorter, mm-hmm. and the residents the first were in agreement, but I think they waited a long time. And I'm glad they're going to get that. But it is interesting because I think, just so you get in perspective, it's like Harrison Avenue, there's another one that a lot of people want to have done.
Mm-hmm.
the cost just to do what I call the basics, not what we're going to do for the long term, because there's a lot of change coming to that street, is $113,500. So,
$137,000.
$137,000.
And that's just the minimum. That's not even replacing the water and sewer.
I call it the lipstick on the pig
there
solution.
You go. Exactly.
And it's just enough to kind of tidy up the really bad spot, but it's not really doing the road.
And it's the thing. It never was a street built to town standards, even in the old days. It was a dirt road on part of it forever, or gravel when it was upgraded, and only in. Not so, in my lifetime, if they finally put some asphalt on it, but it's just, that's a road that when it's done, and we have the money, and we know what is going to be happening in that road, we're going to need to make what I call complete reconstruction. Going completely down to the base, it's going to be one heck of an expensive project. And I'm just throwing this out so we can think about it. I think the time will come, I don't know when, but that street, like most of the streets in this downtown, is going to go through a rebirth. And what we have to do is, when we know that is happening, it won't happen overnight, but let's say whatever happens in the future with the Atkins property, whatever happens in the future, as that whole area is kind of going through a transition now, and I don't think
the
it's
library.
Going to stop. The library. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. And maybe we might have to do half and then another half. That's another thing. Going from Main Street down to where the railroad tracks used to be. Mm-hmm. But maybe that'd be one part, then the other part. It's just going to be a really big expense. But I think my personal feeling is let's do what we have to do so that the people driving on the street do not harm their cars, that they don't get messed up. But I don't think I'm not sure we're at the point where we can do a major reconstruction until we know what's going to happen with the development of that area. I mean, and I'm welcome any.
Big thing there too, when you come out to Broad Street by the farm store. It's going to be a really challenge there.
And I think, basically, at least on the preliminary work, and this came up back when I was on the council and mayor. Haley and everything, that part of the street where Harrison Avenue intersects Broad Street is going to have to be realigned, and it should be. And we've talked preliminary with the property owners in the area, and they, want plenty of notice, and who knows? We want to be arrived fairly, but to redo that street and leave that odd place there, and especially if we can realign it with what. Washington Street Extended is what I call it, right?
And the water line runs right underneath the farm supply store.
Yeah. So there's another. And like a lot of the older streets, because that's one reason things have been so costly and take so much time.
Yep.
It's not just the street; it's everything under it. West Street's another example.
Yep.
It's just some of this stuff is older than time.
Question.
Yes.
And this is a totally separate question, not related to the budget. Alroy asked about 2 months ago if Seahawk Road had, is that the final paving?
No.
Thank God.
Yes.
Thank God.
We did get it restriped so that the striping makes a little more sense, but it's not intended to be the final pay.
No, it's not. Yeah,
they're still doing construction out there.
That road is accident waiting to
happen. And they have had so many accidents out there since
Have they had the accident since they
I don't know. I don't
striped it.
Since they restriped it, it makes it a little more better. You can understand it better.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, but it needs work.
When I travel that road at night, sometimes I don't even know if I'm in the right lane.
You probably
it's so complicated.
Is that because of the way it comes out?
I'm glad it's not the final page.
No, it's not.
Is that street as wide as it's going to be?
I believe they did widen it.
Yeah, they did widen it.
But you can't understand it.
That'll be interesting. Just keep us posted on how that's coming, and if you work with the chief on I do know this, even on things that are obviously been traditional, from State Highway, the first few weeks, there's usually a peak, and then everybody figures out what's going on, or here's what happened to the neighbor. But let's see, if it's a quick, a temporary bleep, that's one thing, but if it's continuing, then we've got to go back and re-examine the situation.
Well, they are on notice. Engineers are on notice. The police were the ones, the county police said that they wanted a meeting, and so, because they said it was just not.
Good. Well, everybody's going to work together, and let us know what's going on, please.
And DBF hadn't released the bond yet, have they?
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, no.
I believe that the chief, he mentioned to me at the end of last week, and I don't know the outcome of the meeting. He was going to meet with some people from the school board and the sheriff's department, because that's our road. That's not State Highway.
Right.
But they were talking about the some of the sticks, you know, the rubber sticks you put in the driveway as, in the streetway as a barrier.
Like we do in the entrance of Decatur Farm.
Yeah,
and all that.
They're the flexible ones. Mm-hmm. Like a type of bollard. So he said, I don't know what they have in mind. I'll keep you posted. And that's the last he mentioned it to me. And that was Thursday or Friday last week.
So. Well, that's pretty
so
recent.
They're continuing to talk, not just the change in the striping,
right.
But they're trying to come
okay,
up
good.
With that's a better good. Solution.
Well, just like saying, keep us posted.
They were all, since you're on that point, they were also at BIS because we had some parents concerned about all the traffic that's on 113 at school.
What's out?
Beginning
all
of
the
school,
way up the road.
Yeah. And then leaving school, you know, in the afternoon, it's just that much traffic.
It's really bad.
Yeah, that's an intersection. It should have been upgraded. When they built BIS back in the 70s.
Yep.
When it was pro-middle. Yeah, that's another, and there again, all I'm saying, at least State Highway has said, you know, that like that the priorities, because they had to figure something, first priority was, down, and it hasn't been done yet, is the intersection of Bay Street and 113. Then, again, it may change because we may request to it, then 346 and 113, and then so Franklin, right?
Franklin.
So all three have to have major upgrades, but with all the controversies going on up in the state house and all that about who gets to decide, we're having to figure out how this all works again. I mean, you know, this is one of the things where just municipalities and rural areas are at the end of the line. Constantly when it comes to road improvements.
We do have a meeting with State Highway on Thursday in regards to that the 113 and Bay Street.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's just something, again, it's something to be aware of because, you know, you don't realize, you just assume that there's this system and they're going to make. We're competing with the Baltimore-Washington corridor for transportation
right,
stuff.
Exactly.
And guess what they say? And the rule is the more people served by road, the higher those priority. And I want to pass this on before I pass on, is that the 113 dualization was designed and approved while I was in college. Right? They started building it when I got in the early 70s. That damn thing's, you know, it's going to come up on 50 years now, and they're finally getting to the end of it. And in Denton, 404, they're years away, because they've got about four more phases to go.
Wow.
So I just think that it's another flaw in a state that wasn't that way. It didn't used to be that way. But because of the tremendous growth of the Baltimore-Washington corridor and those counties, which is real, in the last few decades of the 20th century, we are now at a very distinct disadvantage for what I consider very important public infrastructure. And infrastructure is a problem everywhere, but I just want everybody to be aware of it, because in time, something's got to be done, because we're not alone. And we don't have population on our side, so we actually have to find another way to get the support. And I don't know. It's an unusual thing. Every state has its weird little things, but our weird little thing is a very serious public safety problem. And, you know, we'll get there. And again, the other part, as those intersections are upgraded, to make sure that the latest, greatest in pedestrian safety signals and you know, I think more is planning to be done when they upgrade this one. So check into that. What more can be done when they upgrade that Bay Street 113 intersection? Because that's probably the most crossed.
It is.
And the second one, at least for now, is 346. And I see more people walking and bicycling across than ever. And, of course, the traffic seems to be exploding.
They're going to widen 346 also. That's in the design phase now, so we're starting up.
Well, could you get, when you hear more about it, just let them know.
So what we know is that they're in the design phase. We've already had a meeting, and they're looking at having construction money in the fiscal 20 budget.
Oh, really?
So we've been tracking that really closely so that we can coordinate with them. But we know we're not going to need construction funds in the fiscal 19 budget. We will need something in the fiscal 20 budget.
Because we put up about 25%.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not sure about the details. We're still working that stuff out.
Okay. Yeah,
Thursday's meeting's the start of it.
Good.
Yeah.
That is going so over to Salisbury. Meet with the district engineer.
That is
they
so
wanted
good.
To do it that quick. We met on site last week. Jane was out of town, but Jamie and Marvin, Tim Lawrence and I met them, H.P. Bashiri out there, and some of the engineers on site. They wanted to meet before they have their district tour next week with the big boys from Baltimore.
Yep. I'm very familiar.
So we're going to meet with Jay Meredith and all those people on Thursday.
One thing, even on 346, because it's not there, but I can say the number of people traveling on bicycles, and I don't think it's because of Berlin Falls Park, and you imagine when that kicks in, but I think it's people traveling to the brewery, because there's nothing else that's really changed along there that much, is there needs to be a widening so that they can also accommodate a bike lane, and something to be considering down the road, or even if it can't be done right away, is we need a sidewalk. You know the number of people, I mean, it's scary.
Especially for that poor soul in that wheelchair that's crawling.
Yeah.
What's the area that they're talking about widening? From where to where?
On 346.
Yeah. 346.
346 is the south side of the road, headed east.
Headed east, yeah. Okay.
So it'll make another turn lane to get north around the cancer center, the new cancer center.
Got it.
And then you'd have a longer lane to go left south onto 113 coming from the hospital.
Yeah, you need that.
And that's
those
critical.
Other improvements are supposed to come with that.
And I assume they're going to be eliminating that temporary entrance that leads to goes to nowhere.
Goes to nowhere.
Yeah, that's good. But that's a critical spot. And then, just so everyone probably knows, but after that gets done, whatever they do, they need to head east because the amount of traffic. I'm telling you, when I sit, because every now I go and sit. There's the number of people coming to town. Number one artery is William Street. Number two is Ocean City Boulevard. And then Main Street's third. I mean, if you look at it, it makes sense because of the way things go. So it's another thing. I'm not sure they, and I guess one thing, there's already such a mess down there, again, where the service station, the Rite Aid, all that, the food line. Oh, my God. If we could only go back, because I don't know how we unscrew that mess, but it's horrible, and it's dangerous, and it's like playing bumper cars, and everybody just tries to not bump. So
remember, the state changed the Rite Aid entrance because that was right in, right out, and now it's in, out, any way you want, going over the food line, they just wherever they want to go.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. So I just think I don't know how we mitigate that. But, it's very interesting. William Street, which has been a traditional street forever in town, and it got that upgrade, but we haven't even started with the other side. And then when that's done, then they need to go east on from the hospital, basically, to the shopping center where Taylor Bank used to be.
In the interest of time, if you don't mind me interrupting, it's 8 o'clock, we still have, I'm not sure if you finished with Public Works, we've got Public Works, Building and Grounds Planning, and Parks and Recreation to go through, so I was just going to encourage you to see if you have any questions for Jane and Dave. Thank you, Dave. If not, maybe we can move on to
Public Works, I would like just to add a couple of things, and it's just food for thought, since we're going with
do it right now, but increasing the commercial trash pickup fees as a process to recover some of those costs, because I think those fees have not been changed for ever.
Can you send over that information?
Yeah, I mean, we have
worked
on all the work
to process that not finalized yet. We haven't come up with the final decision of what we would like to see them, Jane, in comparison to certain areas.
And, Kelsey's been working on it. I've been working on it. Laura's been working on it.
Yeah.
So we have a.
So that's something we should expect in the budget process.
It's not factored in this budget process, but if we decide to increase the fees and the revenues will be collected greater, it's a good thing.
Yeah,
so
it's not bad.
So we'll offset our costs.
So something we may anticipate in the early part of the new fiscal year.
Our rates are much lower than the competition, and it shouldn't be. We should be at least there.
Yeah. It's based on our costs. So. Yeah.
Okay.
Our costs just went up a lot.
From what I see, the landfill charges going up every single year.
Yeah, so
I have not seen one year that's the same.
And are there are commercial companies that would come in and handle that for businesses in the town?
Most
there
places
are
do
already here.
There's only maybe 15
here.
that get
if we price ours a little higher, maybe they'll use somebody else.
Most of the bigger ones, they want three times. We all can only do it twice.
Yeah. Or we could stop offering it as a service, as a way of offloading some of the stress on our garbage truck. There's not that many, and maybe it's not something we necessarily want to do.
Are we still in the dumpster business?
Well,
yeah.
What do you mean? I mean, we have dumpsters, but some of the commercial facilities have dumpsters as well.
That's what I meant.
Yes.
We're still in that business.
That's commercial.
Will this trash truck be lifting dumpsters?
No, we have a separate one for that one.
That's the other one.
That's the molar.
That truck's still running around?
That's the old one.
Still, yeah. Oh, we don't have that many dumpsters.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
We don't have questions for Jane from Public Works. I'd like to move to Jeff. And building and grounds, Jeff will cover it on page 10.
Employee costs stay the same because there are none. Okay. But on a serious note, building and grounds, the two big items that are in there, there's a $70,000 request for an elevator replacing the chairlift that's out here now. And just a real quick on that, the two elevator companies that I've had on site.
Page 10.
The elevator shaft that we currently have, my biggest concern was if we put an elevator in, would the footprint of that shaft have to be increased? The good news is no. The bad news is, if you want to call it bad news, there has to be a 4-foot pit that's dug at ground level, and then at the top they call it a doghouse. Basically, a section of that roof would go up, I think they said 33, 34 inches. So $70,000 was the estimate that I got. And then the other big dollar figure there is the $200,000, and that's for the renovation of Town Hall. How did we come up with that figure? We had a contractor in here 6 months ago, just gave him a wish list and said, gave him a set of blueprints, some employees, what the employees have met, gave him a wish list. He came back, itemized it, said it would run. That's why you have the $200,000.
We had Lieutenant Fisher look at the layout, too. Mm-hmm. He's got a good design.
And it wasn't one-day process. We've been working with basically compiling the wish list from every employee coming in the town. We've asked customers what they would like to see. And a couple of highlights. We would like to secure the customer service area a little bit better because we have basically two entrances and two exits, two counters. When people come into one side, the ladies have to run back and forth. And also customers would like to see something like double doors where they can come in, grab a newspapers without actually entering the customer service area and being asked, can I help you, which some people probably want to do.
So can you share this wish list with us?
Yeah, I think
It's not anything elaborate. What it would be.
But I mean, if it can't be right this minute, can you send us something?
Yeah, I'll be glad to do that. I'll actually send you the
the estimate from the contractor that I had here with the itemization.
Yeah, because basically it's like, all right, what's happening in customer service, what's happening in would be happening if this is done now or in the future in the old police department office, and what's happening if there's, because I assume that wasn't one of the goals to bring everybody into under one roof again.
We're looking at moving planning into the building. That was part of it. Okay. Also sort of reorienting Kelsey so she's not sitting outside of the restrooms, actually Kelsey and I. So that, you know,
be in the restrooms instead of out.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever you want.
Out of the fishbowl. So it's, for us, it's sort of those kinds of things. Also, some security improvements on the building beyond what Natalie has talked about. There's a general sense of concern about the lack of security.
Yeah. Now, I can see that now compared to 5 years ago.
Yeah.
The contractor that you got the bid from, there's a reason why you got a bid from that particular contract.
It's not a contract.
It was a proposal. All I did was reach out to a guy that I have used over the years personally. I'll be very blunt.
Mm-hmm.
And told him, I said, this is no way implying you've got this job. I said, I just want somebody to come in and help me come up with a dollar figure.
Is it budgetary estimate?
Just a start.
Yes.
Just a start.
Not of the contract, nothing signed.
No contract.
We wanted a number for this process. So that we had something to work with.
Right.
So it's a budgetary estimate.
So basically, I'm speaking for myself, is I think when we see what's going to be done, we can at least get some judgment about is this good $200,000 to spend this year? Should we do it all at once? Should we do it in two phases? And I don't know. I mean, obviously we're at the beginning of the beginning.
Are we able to lease a government building, the planning building, if we wanted to lease that to somebody as a shop? Could we do that?
You could. We've talked about using it for a combination of record storage and conference rooms. We don't have enough meeting space. So,
but with the library,
we meet over in planning from time to time. We don't actually have decent records storage. We've got a lot of vital records that are exposed to the elements and really need to be in some kind of archival situation where the humidity and the moisture can't actually get to the paper. So our plan was to sort of look at doing something like that with planning. I think the mayor might have a different idea of what he'd like to see with that.
I think the key is, again, that's another phase, right? That's an additional phase after.
Yeah, that's not included.
I just want to make sure. We discussed possibility. And again, who knows? Fire company, it sounds like to me, has been given, a lot of good advice about how to get the primary station in a situation where it's meeting all the needs that have been there for many years. And they've been, one time, I think they were talking about, they didn't have the space because they wanted to put the old Mac downstairs. Now it sounds like to me that's possible again. At one time, they said, no, they went. Maybe you have to do it next door, and it's just been all over the place. So at one time I was thinking, maybe they should move all that down here, and because that was a firehouse. That was the first firehouse. This was the second one. Now they're in the third. But I don't know if they're interested in, because the first thing they got to decide is, and I think we have to be stand very much about behind the recommendations, is that they've got a perfect building there for rental income. Right, so and it also sounds like, and I don't know, it's early on, that they have room for their old Mac on site with that room of all the, decorations and trophies and. But this would be a fallback position if they were possibly.
But in its current state, if we could just weigh that option when we're in the design process.
I'm not sure which option you're talking about: leasing that building, leasing the planning.
If it's a vacant building that we can get better use of by leasing it for commerce,
mm-hmm.
I would not have a problem with exploring that idea.
Okay.
Exploration, that's all I'm saying.
We're definitely trying to figure out all the options. And I think part of it is, part of it is, if we move with this renovation, then that makes that something that, whenever it's done, we want to know what we're doing with it before we get to the end of that process.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Cool.
And a real elevator?
Correct. One with brass and
Plastic, music, elevator operator.
Operator?
Is there a hydraulic platform?
Telephone? Yes, hydraulic.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate that we've been able to go this long without one.
Well,
you know what I mean? It's with the aging population.
We have one, it's just not.
Oh, yeah. You
know. When did those things get stuck?
It's
I've been stuck in it, so I don't want to talk about that.
So, with the elimination of the seal coat equipment, we'll need to add, what, $3,000 to seal the town hall parking lot? Or is that still in here?
We've eliminated that, but then we took the seal coat equipment out of Public Works. We will need to repair the outside parking lot outside of town hall. So, we will need some contracted service.
Yeah, it's around $3,200, the quote that I've received. To seal this back parking
lot. It is not in the budget.
That's a new buying all that equipment. A new buying the $30,000 worth of equipment.
Right.
Okay.
And then I await your direction when we renovate down all the old police department, what cell I go to. Mm-hmm. What do you like?
We have a brass plated one for you.
Okay.
So in the building maintenance, I will add $3,200 for contracted services. I'll add $3,200 for repairs of a parking lot.
Sealing
the parking lot
at town hall. Town hall. Yep.
Yep.
Thanks, Chef.
We have Dave Englehart next.
Page 17. Page 17.
Dave is on page 17.
Good evening. You don't see much change in this. I guess the biggest one is, other than the insurance costs and such, there's one under the office supplies. And Mary had informed me that under the scheduled replacement from cards, that both Carolyn's computer and mine, monitors and computer stations, would be the way they fell, and the timing would be up this year. Because at first I told her it wasn't necessary. We were happy with what we had. But there's...
Well, yours was up this year. Carolyn's would be up next year. So yeah. Split it between 2 years.
Yeah. So that was the biggest difference in change, requested change for any expenditures.
Contracted services include MDI inspections. That's the big line item, $30,000. Dave utilizes company.
Yeah, middle department inspection agency does all our building inspections.
What's their lead time on inspections? Has that gotten longer, or is that
24 hours required within 24 hours?
It's on page 18.
And you're happy with their services?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, we work closely with them, and the only time I've ever had to do any inspections myself, which I can do, was when the library was going on, and every morning they were doing different footers, and it had to do around their elevator shaft. So, and it was, they were behind already, and they kept pleading with me. So I'd go over so they could get a concrete truck there and take a look at the footers and take photos for Norm and measure them, and I'd approve them right there on the site, and then... For about 10 days, we did that every day. So, but that was the only time they didn't do inspections for me. What else did we have?
Nothing really.
I think that's
else
pretty
changed.
Much it.
That's pretty
simple.
Yeah.
Straightforward.
Thank you.
We want to move on to Parks and Recreation.
Thanks,
last
Dave.
But not
thank
least,
Dave.
Mary Boland.
I can tell you, I can tell you that, that in reviewing the capital expenses for the parks, I think I just found the $3,200 to do the town hall parking lot.
Thank you.
Because we did actually, were able to replace the Henry Park tot lot shade this year.
Yeah,
so that could
year.
Be eliminated
oh,
from
good.
Next year's capital budget.
More good news.
Oh, good. That's $5,000.
It goes for at least the purchase of the table and chairs, but not the labor.
Tell me about the $20,000 Ocean's East Playground.
Part of our development agreement with Ocean's East was that they would set aside land for a public park. Not a playground just for the apartment complex, but an actual public park. So we've given it just a very quick, rough estimate of $20,000 to... It's not very big. I think it's a half an acre.
I think it's an acre.
It's an acre.
Yeah.
They designated an acre.
Yeah. So there's not a lot that you can do with an acre, but we're going to try to, you know, maybe put some swings up, benches.
And where is this?
It's in Ocean's East. I am, to be honest with you, I am not 100% sure exactly where it is within the complex.
Probably near the community center, somewhere there.
It is not.
It's right on Seahawk Road.
Yeah, it was intended to be a public park.
At the southwest corner.
Yeah. So that's what that is for.
So it's still intended to be a...
Yeah. Otherwise, it's a violation of the annexation agreement.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. So that was one of the things.
Conditions.
So, for instance, we would not give it a name like Ocean's East Park. We would give it a, I don't know, maybe Seahawk Park or something like that to kind of separate it from the apartment complex.
As long as it's in compliance with the naming policy.
As long as it's in compliance with the naming policy. The other item on the capital budget, the Decatur Park restrooms we discussed earlier, unless you had any more questions about that, I think we're pretty set on that. The main change in the parks budget is the capital outlay. It went down significantly because we were getting the Henry Park restroom done this year and the tennis courts done this year. So both of those items don't carry forward. Contracted services went down a little bit. We found a more local vendor to handle the parks movie nights. It's charging us a little bit less than the national company did last year. Other than that, we've increased utilities a little bit for the Henry Park restroom, where that's completely an estimate. We really won't know what that will cost until we've had a full year under our belt with that. And that's really it. No other real changes.
I don't know if I'm stepping ahead, but I would like to see some thoughts, some planning. The mayor had talked about putting a top lot plan area by Canterbury Village, or by the path, the lot that we purchased, coming out of Canterbury Village.
Okay.
Yeah, that may be this. Again, it's something that we talked about back when that was done.
Okay.
And I guess first thing is where it might be, if it's feasible, if it could be done this year, if it's something that should be done next year. It's like, say, everybody liked the idea. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more kids there than ever. And we were talking about top lot because the concept was it wasn't for the older kids. Henry Park's perfect for the older kids. For little kids, it keeps them from crossing any streets.
Mm-hmm.
Overwhelming majority of families.
It's a lot more people that are walking their kids now at that age, you know, either in the stroller or really young kids.
And part of that is because there's nice sidewalks.
Yeah.
Mayor Cardinelli.
Is it the council's preference that we not pursue putting playground equipment at Ocean's East where there's hardly anybody living, but instead we focus on...
Yeah, that. I think so.
Property off of Flower Street, where it's in an active neighborhood,
and
there's families there.
It's four people.
The Cannery does have a play area, but
it's not
for everybody.
Yeah.
It's small. It's
almost no token.
Yeah,
polite,
though. Yeah, that's easy enough. We actually weren't really, if we got as far as the Ocean's East Park, we were thinking it would be much at the end of the year anyway, so this would work out well.
Yeah, so let's just shift it over, I think.
Yeah, if
that's a great idea.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Might as well put it where the kids are.
And then,
makes sense.
Now where I got all those great grandchildren. Hey, what's a free playground?
I'm not by myself.
That's good.
We'll just call it the Flower Street Tot Lot for now.
Yeah,
I think it's the Illinois Brittany.
Oh, it's the Illinois Brittany.
I don't
none of that's consistent with our naming policy.
He's, he's missing a crucial aspect. I hope he doesn't.
Maybe I can get with Dean with the bathroom there too.
See, there you go, being smart.
Yeah, we haven't scheduled our potty party yet. Any other questions?
You're smart, bad Al.
3 hours is a goodly amount of time to be talking about the budget.
No, three hours is really too much.
No doubt.
When is our next meeting?
Council meeting is next week. Enterprise funds the following.
Executive session at 6, regular meeting at 7. Your next work session is going to be on the 30th.
2 weeks
from today. 2 weeks from today at 5:30 here. Utilities.
Thank you for those reminders.
And the police department.
And then the fire department is going to get next week.
Yep.
And the police department.
So we're going to have the utilities, which is electric.
Stormwater, and then because Arnold's.
We're going to have the police department
they couldn't make
and
it
the fire
week.
Department.
No, fire department is next week.
At the regular meeting. At the public meeting. That's when they're coming, and that's when they were supposed to come in the past. They always came at the last meeting. So at least we're getting that when a little farther along in terms of coming into the system. And quite frankly, maybe it's better than having them the night of us. It's just, we got money.